Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
This is All Things Considered on WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd. 1 year after Donald Trump's presidential campaign survived his caught-on-tape comments about sexually assaulting women, powerful men are now answering for their behavior. Everyone from Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey last October to Matt Lauer and Garrison Keillor today. Last week, Charlie Rose was fired from CBS and PBS canceled distribution of his long-running talk show due to allegations of sexual harassment and assault. But this Me Too moment is not only about gender, it also tells us a lot about race. Joining me now to talk about this is WNYC's editor for special projects, Rebecca Carroll. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Jamie.
Rebecca, you were a producer on The Charlie Rose Show from 1997 to 1999. And for those who haven't read your really meaningful accounts on Twitter, which have been pretty widely circulated and intensely debated and talked about, tell us about your experience there when you were a pretty young journalist.
Yes, I was. I was hired as a writer in early 1997 and promoted about 6 months after that to a producer. But it was also quite clear that I was a self-congratulatory hire, which is to say we didn't really talk in earnest back then about diversity and inclusion, but it was clear that I was there as the sort of token black voice.
Were you the only black face in the room?
To start, I was, and then he had for a brief time an assistant who was black.
An assistant, but not another journalist.
No.
So you were the only black journalist.
That's correct.
And Charlie Rose was accused by at least 8 women of making crude sexual advances toward them, exposing himself, and groping some of the women. Tell us about your experience at PBS on The Charlie Rose Show.
So I was not a victim of sexual assault or harassment. We were all subject to his physical intimidation and his sort of unsolicited back massages. Mm. So he created like this kind of micro fiefdom, you know, where it was pretty much Charlie Rose is the man who makes the decisions. I mean, this is so emblematic of all of these kinds of circumstances where these white male predators have created these microcosms of sort of the country at large, which is systemically racist, systemically patriarchal. So I want to be clear that I was not a victim of sexual assault. What I did experience was constant denigration and, you know, racialized denigration. Mm. You know, we didn't have the word microaggression, racism then, but that's certainly what I experienced.
And you said on Twitter, quote, "For media asking me to talk about Charlie Rose and my experience with the show and my thoughts on these allegations, I'm not coming without thoughts on structural racism, too." So you've alluded to it just now. Let's talk about that larger structural racism, Rebecca.
So when black and brown people are hired in predominantly white workspaces, there is, as I mentioned, this sort of constant barrage of behavior that we have to gauge internally. So we're already thinking about race, whether or not we have even determined whether it's something that is racist or racially motivated. Then you sort of have to figure out how to deal with it, right? Do I say something? Do I push back? Will I lose my job? Do I sound crazy? I want to also say, you know, on Twitter, people said, why didn't she speak up? Why didn't she? You know, the implication there is that I didn't. In fact, I did. And I was punished and I was reprimanded. And there were numerous examples of that. Notably, there was a segment that he wanted me to produce on the slave history movie Amistad, which I had a lot of issues with. And I suggested an alternate way to approach the conversations. And he was so incensed by my suggestion that he canceled the whole segment and he didn't assign me to anything for days after that. So, you know, it was sort of like, okay, which which things am I going to push back on? Which am I not going to push back on? But the presumption on his part was that he, as a white man, knew better than me as a black woman how to approach, how to discuss, how to produce content about black people.
About our story.
That's right.
Did you see the inappropriate, lecherous behavior that has now been reported about Charlie Rose toward other women on staff?
The allegations that are made, I believe, are mostly after my time. I was there for 2 years, 97 through 99. And again, we were all subject to his physical intimidation. And I clearly saw and witnessed lascivious behavior towards women guests. You know, when the cameras weren't rolling, inappropriate touch on the knee or the shoulder or, you know, and it, again, and this has been said by other former staffers, people saw his behavior, but there wasn't anybody to report it to. We didn't have HR, really. I mean, we were part of Bloomberg, but we weren't really part of Bloomberg. And then there was also, you know, the sense of it's Charlie being Charlie, and that's who he is, and he gets to do that. And that is, to me, you know, my initial tweet was sort of, how he just gets to do that? And yes, he gets to do that because he's a white man in America, and that's what America tells white men, culminating in the president of the United States, who has been on caught on tape boasting about grabbing women's genitals, who has constantly dog whistle coded racialized remarks about black and brown people from the beginning. And it's because he personifies white supremacy and structural racism. White men feel like they can do whatever they want to whomever they want in any way they want.
Now, according to a 2015 report of the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, women of color are more likely to experience harassment than their white peers. And of course, Rebecca, it goes without saying that harassment shouldn't provoke mass outrage only when the victims are rich and pretty and white and celebrities. But then why does it seem that this is the case?
You know, I don't want to sound overly simplistic, but this is sort of how this country works, which is that when it involves white people is when it matters. You look at it in every area of paradigm shift, cultural phenomenon for time immemorial. Publishing, mainstream media, movies have said black folks don't sell covers. We can't open box office hits. We can't open movies on the weekend. I mean, all of these things. This is the framework of this country. It is rooted in structural racism.
And we remember Anita Hill. I was a young lawyer when Clarence Thomas was nominated, and the Anita Hill story broke, and many women thought this was the tipping point because so many women, whatever color of their skin, could hear their own stories and her testimony, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where did that moment go?
Yeah, where did that moment?
20 years later.
Yeah.
What happened there?
So this is a really important point, and I'm writing about it. And that is that even when we do report our stories, nobody listens. People don't listen to black women. What happened with Anita Hill is that Clarence Thomas created a narrative in the framework of white supremacy, mind you. And it was a narrative that worked. He used the word lynching.
High-tech lynching.
That's right. And that is what worked. And he got confirmed into the highest court of the land.
For life.
For life.
So how do we move in this moment, this Me Too moment, how do we move that conversation onto the ground?
We have to listen to black and brown women. We are shaping this country. We are survivors. And I think that it's really just a matter of that.
Well, I listen to you, Rebecca Carroll.
And I listen to you, Jamie Floyd.
WNYC's Rebecca Carroll, thank you so much. Let's keep the conversation going.
Absolutely.
I go. An employee who works at this Riverside car manufacturing plant tells me last Thursday she showed up at work and was horrified after hearing what was allegedly found here.
Clocked in and I was told that there was a noose there, that they found a noose on B shift, which is the overnight shift.
Sherry Henry says several of her stunned coworkers.
Yes, they were talking about it.
Co-workers
were, yes.
Henry says the noose was found hanging in a rear loading area on the forward side of the Adient Automotive Seating Plant. She's worked 10 years at the plant, which she says makes car seats for General Motors and Ford.
Emotionally, I'm disturbed. I'm really upset about it. I feel unsafe because I feel like your work environment is supposed to be a safe environment.
And it makes me uncomfortable to come to work.
This employee says she, too, is now afraid to work here after the disturbing discovery.
I was upset, angry, wanted to know who did it.
The next day, Henry says their union chairman texted her this photo of the noose and said plant managers were investigating the incident. Monday, she says she was also told that after reviewing security video, Adient managers saw a white male truck driver who works at the plant apparently hanging it. Henry says the man allegedly upset after learning a white female co-worker had married a man of another race.
I don't believe he cares, you know, about the history behind the noose.
She says the person behind the racially offensive act was suspended. We reached out to the union chairman for comment, but he hasn't returned our calls. And tonight when we went to the Riverside plant to try to learn more.
This is our representative for any information we give out.
They haven't even reached out to us to tell us anything.
So at this point, we still haven't heard from anyone here at Adient about the apparent noose incident. Meantime, Sherry Henry says she's also still waiting to talk to plant managers about her concerns. Robert Townsend, Fox 4 News.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, December 7th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast on workplace racism. This program is specifically designed to figure out suggestions, strategies for neutralizing racist attacks that we experience on the job. If you have figured out things to do to minimize being abused, mistreated while you are in the workplace, specifically if you have figured out what to do so that whites will leave you alone, you can do your job, get all your promotions, raises, everything is taken care of. You're not being accused daily of having stolen something. You're not being required to take a polygraph every other day. You're not having problems if you need vacation time, if you need sick time, if you need to get a transfer. None of these issues. Things are fine. Seems like you're moving ahead until you feel like getting a new job or retiring or whatever it is. You should be one of the first people to dial in and share suggestions because we need those type of strategies. Certainly, if you are a non-white person, especially a black person, and you're having any problems in the workplace, for sure, you should dial in the number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. A few things I wanted to get in before we get to the callers. First of all, there have been difficulties with the iTunes feed not updating for about 2 weeks. It was a problem. It is up to date now. All of the programs up to the broadcast right now from the past 2 weeks or so, they are all entered. They should be accessible on iTunes. You should be able to download them, stream them, check today. All of them were there. The broadcast that we did, I believe 2 days ago, with regards to black maternal mortality rates with Miss Marsha Jones. That broadcast should be there. If you have difficulties, let me know, but it should be updated. And hopefully once we get done today, this broadcast will be uploaded promptly so that folks can access and listen to it. That said, we did have another slight tech wrinkle. I had some difficulties getting Stacy from the UK in, but hopefully we'll have that figured out, Skype updated, and it is a little different from the way that I normally would just add her to the line. That update was not an improvement, in my opinion. That caused some unnecessary trouble getting started. That said, two of the audio clips that you heard at the beginning, one of them was about John Hockenberry. We played a number of his clips, the racism, white supremacy he's accused of, bullying, they called it, at WNYC, New York Public Radio. I have played a number of Mr. Hockenberry's segments on the program over the years, and I have called out ways that I thought he was practicing racism, white supremacy in the clips. I can pinpoint specifically during the summer of 2014, they were, because they're in New York, they were doing a lot of talking about Eric Garner and the incidents of racism, white supremacy that were happening all over that summer, because Michael Brown Jr. happened about a month later in the summer of 2014. Mr. Hockenberry spent a lot of time on his broadcast, as did many folks, discussing those issues. But I remember pinpointing that specifically. In that segment, they were talking about some of the abuse allegations that he's facing. There is a non-white female, black female, Adora Udoja. Hope I'm saying her name correctly, or at least getting close. My apologies. But she wrote about what she experienced with Mr. Hockenberry. She wrote about it at The Guardian. It's titled, "I was co-host with John Hockenberry on WNYC. The experience was scarring." I would encourage folks, check it out. I posted it on my Facebook page. Where she goes over some of the things that happens to her. She wrote in the piece, she was not a victim of sexual abuse. She makes that explicit. However, she says explicitly also, "I was a victim of racism and him bullying her and mistreating her." What she wrote up specifically, I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's lengthy, but I did want to at least read about two, maybe three paragraphs from what she experiences that kind of get to the crux of some of the issues. She says, "A recent investigative report by New York Magazine found a pattern of bullying of the show's co-hosts. First myself, then Faraya Shadea, she's also a black female, and finally Celeste Headlee. Additionally, the report outlined numerous allegations of sexual harassment against Hockenberry and an overall pattern of inaction by the CEO and president, Laura Walker, and her senior staff. Hockenberry acknowledged he had been rude, aggressive, impolite," all in quotes. "I can tell you from experience that that's putting it mildly. I wish I could remember the exact moment I realized I felt like I was being exploited. After all, good stories are about the details. Amen. I will say this, within months of the show's launch in April 2008, my co-host, John Hockenberry, was yelling and screaming at me in the studio at times when senior staff was present. The first time was over the 4th of July week when I had misunderstood a cue from the control room. Hockenberry was an accomplished public radio veteran in a world I was transitioning to from television news. The abuse became normal. I was routinely cut off, ignored, and assigned what I considered offensive race stories." I would say white supremacist stories. "I brought this to the attention of Walker, who I believe is a white woman," I'm just trying to verify, "and her senior team on countless occasions in person and through email. I was also increasingly concerned about the power differential between Hockenberry and our staff and between him and me. John had referred to the show in interviews as the Howard Stern show of morning radio. Presumably, he was Stern, a white man, and I was Robin Quivers, the woman of color sidekick." I will stop there. For people that are not familiar with Howard Stern, he's super popular, trashy suspected racist talk show host. And I'm just saying that not to name call, but that's been his shtick for years, having Robin Quivers on, this black female victim of white supremacy, having her on so that he can be trashy and degrading and have her along with him. That, I mean, just wow. If that's the way that he presented and talked about his show, this is supposed to be serious news. You know, they're talking about serious things, charter schools in New York, Eric Garner, they're talking about serious issues. And your vision of this show is, it's like the Howard Stern of morning news talk radio. Wow. Tacky, trashy, terroristic. Another thing that I will say in this, I think the phrase from a few weeks ago was, don't let it hit the ground, with regards to when the abuse, people being impolite, rude, aggressive, when those things start happening in the workplace. I think the phrase was, don't let it hit the ground. As soon as you see the incorrect things starting to happen, them bullying and that sort of thing, as much as you can, whatever your counter-racist code is with regards to how you say things or what you do, address that immediately. That's why I've said consistently, when they start with the nicknames, calling you things other than your name, just anything where you're being mistreated, where it's clear this is not how they treat white people in the workplace, get that stopped. Because if you let it continue, it will just pile up. It'll just be more and more and more. And it'll be even more difficult to get it stopped. It can be difficult to even figure out where it's going to go, because they just pile up so much mistreatment on top of you. But I would encourage folks to check out the report. I was a co-host with John Hockenberry on WNYC. The experience was scarring. Adaora Udoji, I think that's her name. And again, I posted this segment on my Facebook page. You can check it out. I would encourage reading it and writing down notes. That's another thing. It seems like she was saying that she was writing and verbally bringing up that incorrect things were happening to her. She thought there was a power differential there, which it certainly will be. Document. She said just having explicit details about exactly what the person is saying. If they're saying, hey, this is how I view our work situation, this is like the Howard Stern show, write that down, take an exact note. Those sorts of direct quotes and commentary can be very helpful if you pursue the matter down the road, having as much explicit detail as possible. And one of the other things I wanted to say about that clip specifically, that's, I think, one of the few times, if not one of the only times, that I have heard racism, white supremacy being discussed in the whole Me Too, where people are saying, I wasn't necessarily a victim of sexism, but oh yeah, these white people are practicing a lot of white supremacy racism in the workplace, and that should be included too. If we're going to have an honest dialogue about people being harassed and an abuse of power in the workplace, I have not seen a lot of that at all. And I know Mr. Hockenberry is being accused of sexual harassment against some people, even though the victim that I just read from said that was not the case with her. Racism was what she was experiencing. I also thought in the second clip that we played about the black employees where a noose was placed in the workplace area, those sorts of incidents are very, very common where nooses are placed. We've had guests on the program from the Bay Area where they talked about having the same thing happen, a noose being placed in the workstation. I think you heard some of them saying that they were shocked. They felt stressed. They felt unsafe being in the workplace. Logical, totally understandable. The same thing. I would take all of that seriously, take photographs, and to not be surprised. The noose thing, I think I'd said before that some terms you can just do searches on in like a news search, and you would be amazed to see how many incidents. I think I said before, like the word nigger, you can just do a news search. It is amazing to see how many news reports pop up each week that are workplace type events where someone, you know, is being accused of calling people a nigger. Sometimes it'll be a police officer, or an attorney or a judge, somebody really important who's been accused of this. The same thing with nooses. If you just do a news search every week for the term noose, it is amazing. And it is not just the United States phenomena. It is around the world where you'll see classroom noose incidents, workplace noose incidents. Nothing you should be surprised about, particularly in this era, really anytime under the system of white supremacy, but especially right now. have your iPhone or whatever there so that you can take photographs in case things get moved around or people try and deny. Document and do not be surprised, and definitely take that seriously when people start doing that sort of thing on the job, because again, we've seen evidence that it can escalate. Right on. With that, I will encourage folks, if you are not able to participate, and this broadcast for sure is not just for spectating. I've said consistently, I know Dr. Welsing used to say regularly, Black people, it should be impossible for us to get 2-3 Black people together, much less, you know, a large number of Black people, and not to be able to have a robust and honest dialogue about the racism, white supremacy we are all experiencing in the workplace. If you are just looking for something to entertain or amuse you for a portion of your Thursday evening, there are much better options for the evening. I'm sure Shonda Rhimes has got something awesome cooked up for folks this here evening. This is about participating, sharing. Certainly, if folks have figured out some things that work well to minimize mistreatment in the workplace, you should be one of the first to dial in. If you're having problems or if you have even observed other acts of racism, you should certainly be sharing there. But this is not intended for spectators. This is intended for victims of racism to brainstorm strategies, counter-racist strategies, suggestions for neutralizing workplace racism. Number again, 641-715-3640 and the code 564-943. Pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you do not want to use your phone to join the dialogue, you can just drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can share your commentary, or I can read your commentary that way if you have concerns about people, you know, recognizing your voice or whatever the case is. With that, I will check in, see if we have folks who have commentary they would like to share. First few folks who dialed in with hand up, line should be open. Feel free. Let's see. Oops. See, our caller in Florida, while we're waiting for our other spectators to get their act together. Caller in Florida, did you have commentary?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate allowing me to express myself on the platform. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I had a few incidents in the past couple of days. The first is there was I was having a conversation upstairs during my route picking up paperwork, and there was like one of the JAs, a white woman, and she was saying that that she had just had a, you know, a phone call that was, you know, it seemed like she was bothered by the phone call or whatever. So she basically started, you know, just saying that I guess, you know, she got to set hearings, things like that, and people call up wanting to know the status of the case. So she was telling this guy that she couldn't really help him out much unless he goes to file paperwork for his case. And I guess she said that she had to hang up on the guy because I guess he started cursing her out and, you know, becoming very, and then, you know, I allowed her to go on or whatever. And that the guy called her racist. Okay. And then I was, you know, I was pretty much smiling at it, you know, not to be rude or whatever, but I was like, what, really? And so he accused me of being a racist. And she was like, yes, you know, and she was saying, he was just saying that everybody somebody had. She was.
Can you repeat the last part? It seemed like your volume went out. You said when I guess he accused on the phone conversation, the caller accused her of being a racist, and he said everybody is a, and then it went out. I couldn't hear what you said.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. It's clearer now.
Okay. After he accused her of that, she just went tangent saying that, like, they, I guess, meaning that people who I guess she thinks sounds like him, she said they think that everybody's against them. And she said the police and the system, I guess she meant the legal system. So I guess since she works under a judge, this person, I guess he's been having, like, I guess, confrontations, phone confrontations with him for some months now. But she never told me the classification. But, you know, since she said that this male person accused her of being a racist, her and the judge are both white women. And, you know, so I never asked, you know, what the classification was, but I think for some reason, you know, that could have been a black male. You know, I wanted to call up and share that one. I wanted to start out with that. The second one was, there was a, like, it was a, another white woman that approached me today, the, I guess, the boss lady, whatever, the other warden. I guess I'll call warrant number two. She had an envelope in her hand, and she gave me the envelope, and she just said, well, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I was trying to send this letter out yesterday, and, you know, the guy, the mailman just brought this here, so I guess she was assuming that I forgot to have that one stamped when it was supposed to be sent off yesterday. So I just immediately suspicious that she was lying to me, and she just gave me a envelope that had a handwritten address on it, like it was something. But she said it was supposed to go out yesterday. And I think she was still with this because I did see the mailman. He walked through, you know, I had waved at him, you know, I had, you know, said, how's it going? And I think she waited until he came and left to bring me that, because she had a real sinister look on her face, if I could use that term. And, you know, I know people have mentioned, like, how when you're at work, sometimes white people will speak and then other times they won't. It's kind of like one of those situations. So I had took a picture of the envelope, and I was going to ask one of the people at the post office, like, you know, like, aren't they supposed to stamp the envelope if it didn't have a postage on it? Like, if it doesn't have a stamp on it, they're supposed to send it back with a stamp on it saying postage due. This was a blank envelope. I didn't have anything on it. So I think she could have been trying to test me on that. And the last incident is, well, not really an incident, but it was a development that came about last Friday in the meeting. It was announced that the person who I call a warden, she is going to be stepping down and, like, quitting her position. And they, black, okay, and it seems like everybody was just in complete shock. But I went into suspicion mode because I think I've heard somebody mention, maybe it was Mr. Fuller, when white supremacists, they come and approach you and offer you, like, a position, especially to that level. And, you know, it was just announced out of nowhere, and nobody was forewarned or anything. They just said, you know, she's just going to be leaving, and it's the end of the year, and she just want to go spend time with her children. And she was only here a couple of months. So, yeah, the black male was going to be taking her position. And it just seemed really phony when they were saying that they were going to help this black male out. But I just went into suspicion mode. I don't think other people would know why I would think that. But, you know, I congratulated him. He was standing right next to me. So I'm not entirely sure what he know, what he's getting into, because to add some context, this is the same person who I mentioned last week who was talking about, like, the gun violence with the white girl. So, yeah, it was that same black supervisor. And, yeah, they gave him the opportunity. So he's award when that's like the training part. So it should be interesting how that's going to play out. And that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Very interesting. That will be, I guess, something that you can watch for the coming weeks or whatever it is, as he's training for this job, black male that's going to get this new position. And that's one, I guess, for folks that are listening to the broadcast, if something happens like that, white woman, white man decides that they're going to step down, new position opens up, that sort of thing. We're looking at you to, you know, advance to get a promotion. I'm not saying not to take the job, but I certainly can see why it would be logical to have some suspicion. I guess I'll ask, if they had offered you this promotion that this black male got, would you have turned it down because of your suspicion, or would you have taken it even though you had suspicions?
I think, to be honest, given like the history and the track record, I probably would have turned it down.
Out of fear that they, you know, would have been trying to set you up for failure?
I would say that as well, but they have had other black supervisors who have also started positions and like have, I guess you can say, stepped down. I'm like, there's a black female who was once a supervisor at one time, and then she just, I guess, abdicated that position and went back to her other level that she was doing at the previous time. And this person, I think what they may plan to do is they may have him, I guess, I want to say pit him up against other black people, but like people who have been there like maybe 18, 20 something years, you know, I can see them using that to get, you know, those black people upset and, you know, just to start, I guess, a lot of conflict and drama. But that's how it seems to be going right now, because they have also ordered me a brand new desk, like in my area, because the other female, like I mentioned before, she's getting the desk that I had. So they supposedly ordered me a new desk. And I think, well, like my mom, she says that she thinks something is going on, and I don't know, something is going to happen or whatever. And maybe they're trying to make it appear, I guess the word we're familiar with is to showcase in a certain type of way, like somebody's going to come and visit, I guess, or inspect. Something on the lines of, they'll use the term racial discrimination, because it seems like they're trying to set things up in a certain way with non-white people, putting them in certain positions and making it look polished and being deceitful.
Right on. That is definitely, I think the better understanding you get of racism, white supremacy, at least in my view, the hope is that you can make better decisions for yourself in the workplace. If it's, I'm going to take this promotion, and I won't use the metaphor, but I'm going to take this promotion, but I'm going to be very alert to any efforts to make this promotion fail. I'm going to be alert during the training process. I'm going to be alert for this setting me up to be in conflicts with some of the other black people here. I'm going to take this with the understanding that this is probably somehow, some way set up for me to end up looking bad if I take it. Or if you say, hey, I think this is, you know, something is fishy with this whole setup and I'm going to decline altogether. Just getting a better understanding of racism, white supremacy, hopefully will help you make better decisions, whichever route you take on the job. With this black male specifically, who did get the promotion, I guess, in the coming weeks, you can observe the training process looks like. I know that that's something we've talked about a lot. When you get a black person that gets that's freshly hired. Or freshly promoted, do they adequately train the black person to be able to hit the ground running, as they say, and do really well in the job and have no drop off as you transfer the position over to the next person? That fails a lot of times. And then I think, as you were saying, with in terms of arranging conflict with other black people, just seeing how all that goes as well. But that'll be something that you can monitor. The other one, I think where you were saying the white woman probably lied about the postal delivery, that sort of those little tacky shenanigans, that sort of thing, I think happens a lot in the workplace where whites are just carrying out their little tacky day-to-day activities. I think the best thing, just being aware that sort of thing is happening, where you're already recognizing that, yeah, she's probably doing some underhanded stuff. She probably lied. It doesn't even seem to have the postmark on it, if it's been delivered or what have you. Just better understanding so that you can have your guard up. If anything, that's the way that I would process an event like that. This is a reminder for me that I am working with race soldiers, and I need to be constantly on guard about how I'm functioning in the workplace. Check in, see if other folks have commentary. We did have a person who wrote in as well. This is a black female who wrote in. I'll read her commentary and see if y'all have thoughts or ideas. She says, I have a white coworker who always and only clears her throat when she walks past black people. If there is a group of us, just three, speaking to each other about work-related things, she starts clearing her throat very loudly and consistently. Sometimes I would be the only black person in the section for the day, and she goes on and on with clearing her throat. When there are other white coworkers in the section, or when I'm outnumbered, there is silence from her. If I'm alone in the section with her and start speaking to a client, she starts to clear her throat. I was always aware of this phenomenon and concluded that that is one of the ways white people show they are racist, but her terrorism is intense. I feel like punching her. It annoys me so much. One of my black coworkers offered her a cough drop once, but she declined and still proceeded to clear her throat loudly. This white lady pretends to be nice by offering snacks to us. God, that is death on a plate. Do not take it. Offering snacks to us or asking us how are we and stuff, but we know her agenda. I always thought that when a white person starts clearing their throat around black people, that the white person was trying to show their dominance. All my white coworkers do this, but she is the worst one. If that has ever happened to you, what do you think white people are trying to prove when they clear their throats around black people? She continues, my second situation was I almost got forced to put money in for Christmas gifts. Jeez. To put money in for a Christmas gift for a supervisor I don't care about. This man does absolutely nothing but come around to non-white employees and tell stories of his night out laced with stereotypes. He only does this with non-black employees. That I just would stop right there as best I could. I would try to stop that sort of thing. I think we talked about this last week. We had a black female. She called in, first time caller, I think. And she was saying that she had a white male coworker and he would talk to her about all this inappropriate sexual activity, his dating life. And I think it seemed last week that he might have been trying to talk to her. And then it moved to perhaps a dating situation with her friend. And he, none of that stuff is appropriate for the workplace. And I've said before about being codified. If you start a job and you're not codified, you're not thinking about racism, white supremacy in the workplace, and you've been having these sort of conversations, I would try to get that stuff stopped because that is setting the stage for racists to just be more tacky and racist down the road. And then if they've got you in a situation where you're participating in it, then if you say something down the road, they say, well, oh, man, we've been joking around. We've been, you know, having these conversations for a while now. I thought it was all fun and games. I would, as much as you can, stop. I mean, as soon as possible, get that stopped. This is not appropriate for workplace conversation. Ralph or whatever his name is. I'm here to work. I'm here to, you know, if you need help getting something done. But I just, you know, I don't think we should be talking about this sort of thing in the job. This doesn't seem appropriate business conversation. Back to the letter. So yes, comes around, white guy, supervisor, she had to get him a Christmas, or I guess it was asked that she participate in giving out some sort of money or funds for a Christmas gift. She says, I never signed the card for him or told them I was going to put money in the offering. My manager kept coming up to me asking for $5. I told them I did not want to participate. This past week, I went from declining to participate to my name is signed on the card to I owe the manager $5 for putting money in for me. I'm not paying her at all. Good. I have seen this happen before as well, where it'll be a black person. Really, I've seen it with anybody, but particularly, I would say non-white people, black people, where they have these Christmas exchanges, gift gives or whatever it is, and you don't participate. Or if they have like a going away, because sometimes they do that stuff too. If it's a going away party for someone or a retirement party, and they're going to get them a card or a gift and you don't pitch in. And then it's, oh, yes, I pitched in for you. You can just pay me back. No, I did not say that I was participating. In fact, I made it very clear that I was not participating. I am not participating. So I do not know. I do not owe anyone compensation for a gift because I never agreed to participate in this. I would just be very clear around money issues. And I would do exactly what Mr. Fuller said. I would cry the blues. I am broke. I'm not even doing Christmas for my own relatives. I am struggling trying to see. Matter of fact, do you have a few dollars that I can put on, you know, a bill or a payment I got? I'm totally broke. I do not have $5 to spare. And leave it that I would not feel bad about that at all. Her last paragraph, she writes, my last situation is that once my managers found out that I was pursuing an IT degree, they literally disabled everything on my computer. I cannot right click or print screen. I've been having problems with my PTO and time worked. I would print screen to show proof, but now I cannot do any of that. All emails that are sent to me are filtered by my supervisor and IT before it gets to me. The IT guy has been remotely infiltrating my computer from his. I cannot protect myself via paper trail since they will get to it first and send a broadcast email protecting themselves before getting accused of any wrongdoing. Well, I think that is a first where we've had a report of something that sophisticated. Again, I would just, white people are not ignorant about racism, white supremacy. And this might be another one. And in a workplace environment, there might be some difficulty with this strategy, right? Because if you're in a workplace environment, you do give a resume, which does have quite a bit of your skills and education, academics, even sometimes that might be a part of getting the job. Going through the interview, you might have to or want to share that, oh, yeah, I'm pursuing, you know, additional education, or I'm trying to get this certificate or whatever it is. I'm trying to get this license. Knowing that you getting that additional education, whites might perceive that as a threat. Whoa, we have got an intelligent, skilled Negro here. Wow, we might have to, you know, really do some things to be on guard. We have a black person who's really knowledgeable about computers. We want to make sure we sabotage the machine that they have so that they will be limited with what they can do with it. That's the system of white supremacy. I would try as best I could to figure out other ways to make sure that you have proof of things. Like you were saying, you're having an issue with PTO and time that you've worked. I would definitely make sure, if that means you have to use your phone or whatever else it is, to make sure that you can get records of that information, to make sure if there are any sort of conflicts or discrepancies that you have evidence, if they've disabled that function. I would even inquire about that. Like, is there a reason that the print screen option has been disabled on my computer? Like, that's something that I use to try to document information and to show that, you know, I'm not making something up, particularly if we have issues that are contested. It might be something worth inquiring about. But again, to not be surprised, great reminder of the folks that you work with. And another great illustration why I've said to not use that possessive adjective. Not your computer, their computer. Not, this is not a correction, just a way of thinking that I have encouraged for a while in terms of how we think. That way you don't have slip ups. You don't, we don't forget when we're on the job. This is not my machine. This is their machine. They might be hacking it at this very moment as I'm typing for any sort of thing, combing to look for data, records, anything that they can use against me. So in my view, I would just take all that very seriously. Keep that in mind as you're using the computer. I would ask about the print screen option. And yeah, it's about all I can think of at the time. If folks, I guess, have suggestions about the throat clearing, what do you think white people are trying to prove when they clear their throats around black people? If folks have responses to that question, or if you have thoughts on the Christmas exchange idea, I thought folks might be having to deal with that as well. I guess it seems like she did a good job declining, and then they kind of went and we're going to force her to do it anyway, or force her to pay some money back that was put in on her behalf. If you have suggestions on how to deal with that successfully where it doesn't cause a problem, feel free. I'll see if we have folks who have thoughts on any of those issues. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up should be with us.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to the callers and to the listeners. This is a black female from New York, living in South Carolina now. Yeah, just to chime in and comment on what the black female wrote in. All my life, I have had that running around in my brain computer about white people clearing their throats. I walk past them in the store, they do it. All my life, since I was a child, and I think she's correct in believing that this is their way of, this is that woman's way of asserting her dominance. And I also believe that it is their way of letting you know that they are disgusted, that they get a little spit in the back of their throat just from being in your presence. And it's like, you know, you're like a, you know, you totally disgust them, and that's their way of letting you know it. It happens. This is just one of the things that they do. So what I do when I, and it's always one of their pathological, aggressive, racist moves. So when I hear them do that, and it's often when they're passing me in the store, or, you know, I'm looking at something that they're looking at, or I'm shopping or what have you, I do it back. So when they clear their throats and let me know that I'm disgusting them, I clear mine and I let them know that I feel the same way. The feeling is mutual. With regard to her situation with the holiday, what Mr. Fuller says, I think that's an excellent strategy. If somebody comes back to her and has the audacity to tell her that they put in $5 for her for something that she made it known that she was not participating in, I would still say, I'm sorry, I just don't have it to give to you. Hard time, struggling, I didn't have it to give in the beginning. You know, and they'll concede. They'll back off. But I have been in that situation as well, and I've used that, and it's worked. I can't afford it. I'm sorry. Oh, nope, not me. I can't do it. You know, got a kid in college. Just, I've done that before. I just wanted to also say that one of the strategies that one of the callers, Amy, uses, silence, is I used that this past week, and it just works like a charm. Just don't say anything. Don't say anything if you can avoid it. NCNC, no contact, no conflict. I was in a break room situation, and I'm a substitute teacher, so, you know, the white women rule, right? So it is weird. It's, I can be sitting in a spot that I think that is a good place and nobody's going to bother me, and they just swarm in. And I was sitting in a break room, and it started to fill up. And, you know, I just gave the common courtesy, you know, good afternoon. How's it going? Oh, it's going great. So started to fill up with white women, and there was one black woman, and I think she was new. She was a new teacher, and she had a birthday party over the weekend for her child. And she began to show all these pictures and describe to all of these white women, so describing what was happening and all of the pictures. And one white woman said, yeah, some, you know, oh, yeah, I know she was happy. All that money you spent and all that time you spent talking about that. And, you know, confused victim went right over her head. She didn't realize that she had been victimized with, you know, with that woman's comments. And then it morphed into talking about her daughter, talking about her aunt, how her aunt was a Seventh-day Adventist and how strict she was. And I'm sitting there at the table, and something said, just, I looked up, these women, if you could put that book, Delectable Negro, if you could just put that into a picture and just like on the cover of a in that book, a picture in that book of a black person talking and a white person just eating up the knowledge, just eating up the information. And, you know, my little melanin sense said to me, this lady is new. She gonna have a hard way to go because she doesn't even realize what is going on, what is happening to her. But anyway, I just listened. But when she started just regurgitating all of this information, VGQ, victim of racism, when she started just talking all of this stuff about her personal life and her the religion and her upbringing, I really felt like I just felt so bad. I felt really, really bad. And I just got up and left. You know, and I said, okay, have a great afternoon. And I just left. And I just said, you know, when you see a victim being victimized like that and they have no idea about what's happening to them, as a someone who is aware of counter racism, it really, really just kind of at some point you get emotional about it. You know, you feel some sort of, you know, you feel sorry for that other victim. So anyway. That was one of my experiences I wanted to share. The other one is that I teach at a school. Sometimes I have an assignment at a school where most of the time I'm covering for white women, you know. And this particular school, they always call me back on assignment. And the last two times, the first time I noticed that, you know, well, most of the children are black. And I noticed that there was a teacher there that every time I'm in the hallway with the class, even if these black, and it's always black boys, they can be standing there not doing nothing or just walking down the hall. She stares at them, and she finds something to yell at them about. Get on that line. Why are you walking like that? I mean, just berating them. At first I said, okay. Second time, these kids, they weren't saying. They were just walking. Why are you looking that way? You're supposed to be looking forward. She just starts chiming in on them. And then she plays the black boys, this racist white female. So I have to go back there again next month for a few days. So I was just wondering what anybody thought about a strategy. My strategy is going to be when I see her in the hallway, and I know she's going to do this because she hones in on the black boys in the line. What I'm going to do, because my voice, when I talk to my classes, I'm very commanding, I'm very clear, audible, and I put a lot of emphasis in a lot of the things that I say to them in order to get whatever it is that we need to get accomplished. And I find that that's what I plan to do is, while I'm walking down the hallway with them, it's just be them. You guys are doing great. What an awesome job. I can't wait to tell your teacher how fabulously you're walking through these halls. You're doing such a good job. And, you know, just begin to praise them over and over and over and over again so that she doesn't get a chance to throw her darts at them or to belittle them and to practice racism against them. So I was just thinking about that because it really bothers me because I can't say to her, "What you know, they're doing just fine," you know, because it's not my class. I'm just, you know, I'm subbing there. So I didn't want to put that out there because that could be something that she, and it could be a situation where I won't be invited back to that school. So I definitely didn't want to come from that angle. So I thought maybe if I came from the angle of actually even calling out names, they terrorized, even if the kids were horrible before we left the class, even just calling out names and saying how wonderful of a today and how wonderful they did at their last assignment. Just begin to praise them. And I'm only going to do it when I see her because I know what she's going to do. So I was just thinking maybe that might be a strategy. And that's all. But I'm telling you, these white women in these schools, Gus, I'm very, very grateful for this show because I had never been in education before, but I am seeing all of it, in real time. It is very, very true. This is a strategy. They are in our children's faces. They are programming them. If I hear another be quiet, look straight, I sat down in an after-school program yesterday and watched a racist literally chew her lip off. Because she was just constantly looking around to chastise and something. And these kids were sitting there watching a movie. Why are you sitting over there? I mean, and then if she wasn't saying anything, she started chewing on her lip. Some kind of, you know, maybe that's like the clearing the throat. Maybe that's one of the things. But anyway, I just wanted to share that. And thank you for listening. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, black female caller in New York. With the first situation that you shared on again, BGQ. And I think, you know, a big part of that just comes down to not understanding what racism, white supremacy is and how it works. Because I know no one told me that when I started working that, you know, when you go on a job, you really, you know, do not want to share a lot of unnecessary information that, you know, the folks that you are around. If they're white, you're probably working with racists. So it's no reason for you to just be going and telling them all of your business and what your plans are for the weekend and, you know, what other academic pursuits that you have. It's just not in your best interest. You're really potentially informing your enemies so that they can be more deliberate in their attacks against you. I hadn't got that sort of information. And I think most black people just, you know, have not been informed about the dangers that await us in the workplace. So again, with this broadcast and other folks just, in my view, share that tidbit. I've just seen consistently where black people get in a lot of unnecessary trouble. And sometimes it's things that can be easily avoided by just having less to say, keep it focused on the job. Not saying that you got to be mute in the workplace, not saying that at all, but you just don't want to be talking about your personal private matters. Keep it work related, cordial and work related. With the second matter, I think that is just an absolutely brilliant idea because of the position that you're in as a substitute. I was thinking the exact same thing that you were, that if you say something to her, she's just going to be a race soldier. She'll be like, I am going to do everything in my power to see that this Negro never gets back in this school again, or maybe any school in the state. But just going and addressing the black students specifically and praising them. You all are, you know, the most well-behaved students in the school. Great job. Great day. And calling them by an absolutely phenomenal suggestion. And man, you talk about lip chewing. She will be cursing everybody out as you're doing that, because that'll probably big time interrupt her striking, verbal strikes, if she was going to try and get a few reprimands in as they're going down the hall. I think that's brilliant suggestion. We'll see if any of the other folks, if they have suggestions for how to respond with that, how to deal with this racist woman and her class of racist students. And then the other question that we had about the throat clearing, if folks have thoughts on that, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code *64*943#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. And for sure, make sure I emphasize again the danger of white women in front of those classrooms cannot be understated. Something that we have talked about many, many times on the program. White girls do it better. Terrorism from the front of the classroom, for sure. I think that's about 70% of the workforce with regards to teachers in the U.S. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up. Yes, sir, Roz, we can hear you.
Greetings, Gus. It's great to be listening to the program this evening. Thank you for it. As always, it's I think it's one of the most important programs to be created. So I greatly, greatly appreciate you and everyone else who calls in. For the previous caller, I think that her idea was brilliant. I think just like you, I said, man, this is great, you know, because she can be preemptive and then at the same time not be abrasive with the white person, which could, of course, potentially keep her from going back to that place. And I think those young black males need her presence there. However infrequent it may be, I think they need that. One thing I've always thought about, and I wrote this in an essay. Matter of fact, Pam actually posted my essay to her site a couple of years ago, and it's about education. And one thing I remember was I was discussing, you know, white, if you send your child to school, the teacher becomes a surrogate parent. So that white person is going to be viewed by your child as a surrogate parent. That's the role they play. And when you couple that with all of the white female images that are placed on the television in front of them, and just the way the society functions around and coalesces around the worst white supremacists, the origin of white supremacy, white females, it just creates a really psychological disconnect for the child, because the child is black, the woman is white, and all she's doing is yelling at the child, especially if it's a black male. And right there, just in that process, what you're watching is the school to prison pipeline, because all of that yelling and all of that verbal abuse is basically what they're going to face in prison. They're going to be yelled at, told what to do, when to use the bathroom, you know, everything. So it's basically preparing them for a life of being disrespected. And that is just the most terroristic thing you can do, especially to a black male child, because the child is going to look for some sort of positive reinforcement at some time. But they're white supremacists, and we're the enemy, especially our children. So they're not going to ever praise them. They're going to always abuse, because this facilitates everything else that comes with the abuse that they're going to be set to face for the rest of their lives. And I think that everything she discussed was brilliant, and just big ups for Black Self-Respect to you. The lady from the first story you told, man, that is just a sad scenario. Just the whole concept of running around and telling them your business. And the crazy part is, when we are in the job, what we have to recognize is the happier we seem to them, the more they're going to come at you. The more they're really going to try and just do anything to put you down, or just depress you, because the idea is that the job is the plantation. It is just the modern version of the plantation. And on the plantation, slaves aren't supposed to be happy. We're not supposed to have great times outside of the job with our family. So the more you talk about that, the more they're going to even get rid of you for that type of stuff. Oh, you got that kind of money to spend on your child's birthday? Okay, well, you got to go. It's no different than, I remember, Gus, you had a black male who had discussed always taking his old beat up car to work. And I think something had happened one day, I guess, with his wife, and he was forced to take his brand new, you know, high end vehicle to work. And he shortly thereafter, the white people saw it, he shortly thereafter got fired. And it's just because you're not supposed to make money to live in a way in which you have extra and excess to the point where you can buy a high-end vehicle that a white person is going to be jealous of you for having. Oh, no, that doesn't happen. I mean, even coming up in the crack era, you couldn't be a drug dealer and drive around with the newest anything, because you'll be stopped literally every other block by the police. So, I mean, it's just the way that they function refined white supremacy. And hopefully she starts to become less confused, because she's going to have, like you said, serious problems on that job. But also the smacking of the lips, man, that is narcissism 101, acute narcissism. And it absolutely, it does show that they're disgusted with you. And it's almost a way of them saying they're allergic to Black people. Just anything about us makes them sick. And that is one of the things they do. And I do the same thing. If they clear their throat, I clear my throat too. So I know exactly what you were saying. And, the narcissistic aspect is that the clearing of the throat is going to call attention, which is when you said that some of the people, the Black people, were offering her a cough drop. That's the attention. That's the vampire. That's the delectable Negro right there. I have to get your attention. And then in getting your attention, I'm letting you know that you make me sick. But I don't want anything from you for this this clearing of the throat, because I'm clearing up my throat because you're like a particle stuck in the back of my throat every time I hear you speak or every time I'm in your presence. So I like to give it right back to them. And yeah, it's just a refined, one of a very, very highly refined form of passive-aggressive white supremacy, because it's something where they're not being overt about it, but they're still letting you know. And then on top of that, the clearing of the throat is to also get your attention. So yeah, I agree with you on that. And today was my first day on my new plantation, so it was an interesting day. I was just doing more listening than talking and asking of lots of questions about the position. Some people did tell me about themselves. I didn't say much about myself at all. I was pretty much observant and quiet, pleasant with folks and stuff. And we ended up going out for to this tea place for some tea, and just for them to have this discussion. And a couple of them were telling me all about how they got to the company and all of this stuff. And I was so annoyed because I actually had to hold the door for some white folks, and I was so annoyed I wanted to slam the door in their faces so bad, because I just don't like helping them. So it's a real dual consciousness that I have to walk around with, because my first instinct is to really just do everything I can to make them uncomfortable or just keep them as far away from me as possible. And the vast majority of the time it works. That's why even the person who talked about the coworker paying for the gift, the $5, and saying, "You owe me," man, I wish a coworker would have tried that with me. I wouldn't even tell him I don't have the money. I said from day one, I said, "I'm not participating. So if you chose to donate that $5, you go ahead. I don't owe you anything. We never discussed this. I didn't sign a contract with you. You chose to put up this money when I said I do not want to participate. I made that crystal clear, and that's it. I don't need an excuse, you know? And I'm just thankful that, and it's something I always think about with the illustrious grandsister, Dr. Welsing. One thing she had said on a few occasions is that white people know who they can pull stuff on. And sadly enough, that person felt they can pull that on her, but her response was just wonderful, as far as just saying, I didn't agree to this. I'm not giving you $5. I don't owe you anything. But I'm thankful that I've been a person through the majority of my life that white people tend to stay as far away from as possible. Especially when I'm out and about. The job is a whole different story, but as far as when I'm out in the street, I'm not one of those people they think they can victimize, and I'm thankful for that, and hopefully it stays that way, because things can always change, but thankfully it hasn't, and I hope it won't. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Amen. I guess congratulations on starting a new job, although I do recall you saying that you have finally enjoyed your time away from the plantation, so I guess, congratulations, and hopefully you'll be able to migrate back to enjoying more of your free time as soon as possible. But other folks who dialed in, appreciate the suggestions and insight from Roz. Definitely concur about, personal business, as we've stated before. That throat clearing, too, I totally agree. I think Roz and the other folks were completely accurate. I also think, too, sometimes they try to do, if you've seen parents or older people, if they're around children, sometimes that'll be their low-key reprimand, right, is to just do the throat clear. If they want you to shut up or whatever it is that you're, the children are doing that they want them to stop doing, they'll just do the throat clear. And they go, oh, okay, we need to, you know, act right before we get in trouble. Some of it seems like it could be that too, right? Because I think she, the black female who wrote in, I think she was saying that she would do this if it was like two or three black people in the, I guess, the work area, and they were talking about work related things, then she would come in and do the throat. I think some of that could be it too. Like, all right, niggers, get, you know, hush it up, get along, that type of thing, showing her, her racist disdain, in a nonverbal manner, if that makes sense. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary on any of the questions, I think we got the question about, the throat clearing, right? What white people do with the throat clearing. I think we got the question about, I guess, how you deal with the holiday situation. Someone has roped you in for some gift giving of some sort. We had that question posed as well. Folks had responses to those. And our caller in New York about how to deal with the racist white teacher who's verbally lambasting these students. And she's going to try and offset that either by offering praise to these students, or I guess if other folks had an idea on dealing with that. If you dialed in with a hand up, you should be with us.
Oh, yeah, good.
Hello.
I'm sorry. Is it okay,
Jeff?
Or should I be quiet?
Just give us 1 second, Roz. We'll get the other person in, and then we'll bring you right back in.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I think my microphone is on. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
All right. Hello to everyone. I have a two-page story that I would like to read. I'll go ahead and start it. On the morning of Tuesday, November 28th, I asked my manager a question. Are you aware of any examples where choice writers subsidize captive writers? Now, what I'm about to read, I should give some clarification, is a story about, you know, the use of words and asking questions so I could better understand the kind of job that I do, and I'm going to go over that in the story as well too. Before delving into my story, here's some background. I'm a transit planner for the county and metropolitan planning organization in which I reside. I've been in my job for over 3 years. One of my responsibilities is attending the meetings of the local mass transit provider. During the transit board of directors meeting on Thursday, November 16th, graduate students from the university gave a presentation on the customer satisfaction survey they conducted on mass transit riders. For the most part, they presented information to the board that the board already knew. They also made recommendations to the board about what they can do to improve mass transit services. One of the recommendations was to develop more land around the transit center in the downtown area so that there is more population density to run more mass transit services. The premise for this recommendation is that if you improve services for choice riders, services will improve for captive riders. So what are choice and captive riders? Captive riders do not have access to or are unable to use a personal vehicle. They are dependent on the transit system to travel. Captive riders include persons too young to drive, the elderly, persons with disabilities, and those without the financial means to own and operate a personal vehicle, usually non-white people. Choice riders have the means to drive themselves but choose instead to use transit. Reasons choice riders use transit include saving money, convenience, comfort, or environmental principles, usually white people. On a side note, recently, I was responsible for writing the transit section of our MPO's long range transportation plan. Mandated by federal law, this plan is written to set the goals and visions for transportation infrastructure for the next 25 years, and it's updated every 5 and 10 years. Consultants were hired for the latest 10-year update. They insisted on this narrative about captive and choice riders, and through 3 drafts, they ignored my edits, which is in contradiction to their narrative. Afterwards, I was advised to email the consultants with the permission of my manager, requesting why they insist on this narrative about captive and choice riders, and they said that I make a good point and incorporated my edits after ignored them for about a month. Now back to the graduate students. I raised my hand and asked, how are you going to improve services for captive riders who make up 3/4 of the ridership when most of the riders who use the system on final destination is not downtown by focusing development downtown? She merely reiterated her recommendation. Moreover, as she reiterated her recommendation, she had a look that I can only describe as disgust and contempt for me having questioned her recommendations. This is interesting because the very degree she is pursuing in graduate school, I have, and I've been working professionally for over 3 years. I'm about halfway through now. Aside from her response, one of the board members felt the need to respond on her behalf by stating that there is research that choice riders subsidize captive riders. After the meeting, I asked that board member what research he was referring to and if he would mind emailing me a link or a copy of the research he was referring to. He said that he couldn't remember the name of the article nor the author, but when he located it, he would email it to me. It is important. It is worth noting that this particular board member is a trained lawyer. Before going into private practice, he served as assistant solicitor for the circuit court. Now, for those unaware of what a solicitor is and does, my state is the only state that has solicitors. Every other state, solicitors are referred to as prosecutors. Straight from his private practice business page in his bio, he says he in his tenure as assistant solicitor, he resolved over 2,000 felony cases and won over 24 convictions at jury trials for the state, including 3 convictions for life without parole sentences. I confirmed that a solicitor, I confirmed what a solicitor is with the county attorney. Fast forward to November 28th, I asked my manager if he is aware of any examples that were not anecdotal or metaphorical of mass transit systems where choice riders subsidized captive riders. He said yes, through taxes. For example, the local match that funds transit services through the state's gas tax, or when a developer develops some prime real estate that is served by mass transit, it's subsidized by the people who live in the development by using the transit services. Another way is through property taxes because most captive riders tend to be renters. It was at this point I asked him, what is his definition of subsidized? He responded, it's funded to make up the gap in providing services. He also said that in more developed transit systems, like the one in the neighboring city, captive riders subsidize choice riders because of all the development along the light rail transit line and the fact that it's more expensive to ride the light rail than it is to ride the local bus in a neighboring city. I asked, doesn't the fact that the light rail costs more to ride, doesn't it make the system exclusionary to people who can't afford it even when it's a public utility? He said it's not exclusionary and that there is usually a program that allows low-income riders to get passes if they need them from places like United Way and Miracle Hill. Then I asked, aren't there plenty of taxes that people pay but don't benefit, like the taxes for the debt on the local arena, libraries, public schools, because not everyone has children in the public school system? By extension, isn't everyone subsidized when they drive on the roads because user fees don't cover cost and maintenance? He said, yeah, but the idea is that people usually benefit directly or indirectly. Now, remember, my original question to my manager is he aware of any examples of mass transit where choice riders subsidize captive riders? After our conversation, I emailed the professor who has a PhD, who is the teacher of the graduate students who presented to the transit board of directors. I told him of the statement made by the member of the board about choice riders subsidizing captive riders and asked if he was aware of any examples. The professor responded, did they say this? I don't remember it. If they did, they shouldn't have. I've never seen evidence of this. Afterwards, I told my manager what the university professor said about no evidence. To me, I wrote down this story because to me it was a very interesting example. I'm trying to ask questions. I'm trying to get a better understanding of my job and how people make decisions and how I should be going about making my decisions. And when I asked for the simple examples, people start using anecdotal examples of things and how things should work. But when you ask for specific examples of things, no one could really ever give me a very good example of something that exists. And that is my story for today. And I'll mute my line.
Spectacular. I appreciate the detail. And that's something I think you'll see consistently. NPR, they did a report about a week ago, and it said that we like people more if they ask questions. And I laughed and laughed and laughed. I didn't play it on the program, but I was like, wow, I have not had that experience as a Black person, particularly if you start asking, you know, serious questions as you did when whites make statements and you ask a question. It doesn't even have to be that you're being nasty in asking your question. Just, oh, do you have evidence that choice riders, quote unquote, are subsidizing, confined riders? Is that the term?
Captive riders.
Captive riders, yeah. Are subsidizing captive riders. Do you have evidence of that? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everybody knows this. I'm surprised you didn't learn that. And then you keep questioning and questioning, and you never get to the report. Did they ever email you a link for the study?
No, I never got a link, and I never expected to get one. But when I see that board of that board member in my next meeting, I'm going to specifically go to him and ask him for that report or whatever he's talking about. And I can't wait for the lie or whatever excuse he's going to come up with.
Absolutely, being prepared. And I've said this consistently. I think when you understand what it means to be white, I think it'll help so much in terms of lowering your stress and putting us in a better position to respond in these type of situations where you're not angry, you're not surprised. And since you're already expecting this sort of, you know, low class and deceitful behavior, you can already be thinking, oh, OK, this is the question I'll ask. This will be the next question I'll ask. I'll already be prepared for how I want to deal with this sort of thing. And just with this, since this is about public transportation, it's been my experience. If it's a city with a substantial number of black people who might be using the public transportation, it's been my experience that white's frame of mind is totally different. It's, you know, oh my God, we do not want to do this, or we don't want to have great public transportation. That's been my experience being in Seattle, where it's very few black people. They have extraordinary public transportation. Like, you can get a ride, you can pretty much get anywhere in the city of Seattle easily on public transportation. I think you can get to the airport 24 hours a day easily. Public transportation to brag about in the city of Seattle, whole King County area, really, because they don't have a whole lot of black people that are going to be using it. It's going to be white riders of the captive and or choice nature, as opposed to when I lived in Atlanta, when they used to joke about having poor transportation because they did not want black people to be able to easily access all points of Atlanta. Lots of black people down in Atlanta. Appreciate the detail. Again, detail very important with regards to workplace racism. And that's really important because, I mean, you got a lot of people, as he said, a lot of non-white people who don't have a vehicle. In fact, I read a report today in Virginia where they were talking about the tolls on the Beltway going into D.C. at certain times during the day, peak business hours. The toll can be $40 one way just to get into D.C. That right there can be cost prohibitive. You might have to go a different route or find somebody to carpool with. When non-white people are dealing with these type of problems and you've got white sitting in the background who can just make up total lies about things as they go about planning public. And this is tenure. We talk about that all the time. White people have 500-year plans, 50-year plans. You just said we do our 10-year update, 5-year update. That's supposed to be for the next 25 years. We're making our public transportation plans. That's impacting huge numbers of non-white people. And you got whites that are just sitting around practicing racism, lying about who's funding it, where it's going to, and who's going to benefit from this. You even ask direct questions. You got a large chunk of black non-white people, captive riders, who are going to be using it. What are we going to do to improve their experience? And just repeat what I already said that has nothing to do with this particular group of riders. Standard operating procedure in the workplace. Again, I think you'll be more acute at picking up this sort of behavior. And again, being able to ask questions, being persistent, not consistent, being persistent with following up, asking questions, getting answers, and then coming back. Like, I checked, I went to the information that you said, and I still don't see any reference points. Can you explain where you got this information from? Asking more questions. We're trying to do our job with accurate detail. Great report. Did folks have any questions on what they heard? Questions, comments? Grant, soon folks are straight. Other folks, if you dialed in, if you have your own comments that you would like to share, or if you wanted to discuss anything that you've heard thus far, feel free. We did have a few questions on about how to deal with the classroom situation, as well as a question about the throat clearing. Other folks who dialed in with the hand up, did you have commentary?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, this is HV. Good evening, Gus, and to the rest of the callers. Gus, I don't have a workplace racism situation or comments on or any of that. What I wanted to do, if possible, is just get Roz's email, because he said his email on here before, because he spoke about wild lettuce and something silver. The thing is, I suffer with, like, migraines, and so I had questions for him about, you know, dosage and where to buy and things like that. So if I could possibly, you know, just ask him for his email. If not, I can do it some other type of way. I don't know if that's, you know, right for me to be doing, but I was just calling to ask your permission if I could do that, because I heard he was on the call.
I reckon we can handle that slight deviation. Roz, did you have your email, sir? Uh-oh, might have muted his line. Are you with us, Roz? Did you mute yourself? Uh-oh. I guess if I will look, he might have dropped out for a second. As soon as I see him, I'll bring him back on, and I'll make sure that he gives his email out on the broadcast so that you can get it, HV.
Thanks so much, Gus.
Yes, ma'am. My apologies about that. I know you did mention colloidal silver. If you...
Colloidal?
Yep. He sent me some of that when I got my wisdom teeth extracted. Colloidal silver. You can look it on, if you want to check online or Amazon. It's very, very popular. They recommend it for a wide variety of health problems.
Would you happen to know how to spell colloidal?
C-O-L-L-O-I-D-A-L. C-O-L-L-O-I-D-A-L.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yes, ma'am. Other folks who dialed in, I will be on the lookout for Roz. Other folks who dialed in, if you had a hand up, if you had commentary that you wanted to share on any of the questions that have been proposed thus far or any of the commentary that you've heard.
Can I hear it?
Yes, sir.
Yep. I guess, and hello to everyone else. I just want to give you a quick update. If you recall, a few weeks back, I had called in about the after school, the kids' school there, where someone hacked into the teacher's account and sent a very racist email to another black teacher. And just a quick update on that. From what I hear so far, that the teacher has not returned to the school. The black teacher has not returned back to school after this happened. And my kids tell me that what they have heard is that this isn't the first time that that had happened, where some type of email was sent. And so from what happened before, nothing was done. And so the teacher, again, according to what my kids are telling me, the teacher decides not to come back because, again, this wasn't the first time and nothing was done before, so she doesn't plan on returning. So that was that one situation there to give you an update on. Another quick scenario at work, each quarter there's a review that's done by the president, and the president of our company is Hispanic, and we're kind of gathered around at the holiday indoor luncheon today, and we're discussing some of the things that were said and posted on the screen there. And whenever there's a big win, a customer buys a huge order, then it's referred to as a win, you know, a project win or some type of win. So they go over the wins for the quarter. And so one of the suspected racist coworkers just really wanted to express the way pronounced win. He would call it ween, ween, ween. So others are kind of laughing on. I'm just kind of looking and, you know, not giving in to the laughter there. But again, just one of the ways that some of the suspected racists really kind of will laugh at and comment about the way others that are non-white have accents and all. And they'll joke about it and make no big deal about it at all, you know. I don't think that it's an issue. So that's another issue. Another scenario at work, this is the time of year where we have to submit our end-of-year reviews for our direct reports. So as a manager, I have to submit a review for those that work for me. And mine was returned. for review because of the my director didn't agree with some of the comments that I had made. And so this ties right into one of the books that we just finished reading, the book read there, Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk, where, and again, it ties into Neely Fuller's comments about the definitions, the way words are defined, being specific about that. So it was kicked back to me to review because of when there's different competencies, and you say this is a person's strength, weakness, or they're competent in this area, where I had specified that, you know, this person, I believe that this was a strength of theirs, of this particular competency. It was a strength. Well, I got kicked back saying, well, no, I don't really think that this was a strength of this person. And I, you know, tried to defend and say that it was. But then, so my director pulled out the definitions of the different levels of the competencies there, of whether it's a strength, weakness, or just competent. And when he pulled out and he defined, he read off the definition. So this is exactly what the definition says. And if we don't, you know, if we're not abiding by this definition, then we're not really doing this review correctly. I mean, he wasn't doing it in a, well, at least not that I thought, well, of a way that was kind of, you know, kind of trying to degrade me or whatever, but just the fact that it made me pay more attention to the use of definition or the definitions of words. So I literally had to say, you know what? I glanced right over. I didn't really pay too much attention to the definitions and didn't write the review according to what the outline definitions are. So when you spelled out, okay, here's what the definition of strength meant, and it really said something on the lines of, that others clearly see that this is a strength, others would clearly see or comment on it. Something on lines too, this was the type of person that you would nominate for a team or committee to be one that could coach or teach others how to be strong in this area. So when you looked at that definition, when I looked at that definition, I had to back up and say, you know, he's right. You know, I don't see that as according to this definition. You know, so again, going back to Crazy Talk, Stupid Talk, paying attention to the definition of words. When something is defined in the review of this is how you should grade this person or rate this person according to this definition. If it's not according to that definition, then, you know, you're not reading it appropriately. So again, I had to, and I don't really think that really applies to much of workplace racism, but it ties into the workplace and, again, the definition of words, the meaning of words. And that really gave me an eye-opening lesson there to kind of really pay attention to the meaning of words. So that was it, pretty much it. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Absolutely. Words are extremely important. And I think that, in my view, it does tie directly into workplace racism. I know you were saying this was you writing a review and you had to, I guess, do a revision to go back and look at the definitions to make sure the review matched up with the definitions. But I think a lot of times when Black people, victims of white supremacy, are being reviewed, at least it's been my experience, that you sometimes can have difficulty getting access to some of these definitions. When they're writing us up to tell us, you know, what a shiftless no count we are, and this is why you're not getting a promotion, and this is why you're not getting a raise, it's been my experience that at times we're the ones that are saying, man, you know, what are the definitions? Can you qualify why you're saying that I'm not measuring up in leadership or wherever else you say that I'm not a team player? Can you qualify that? It's us a lot of times that end up not having a definition to understand why we did not get a sparkling review, even though we've been working hard and doing our diligent work. But absolutely, definitions are extremely important. And in fact, if possible, it might be a good idea if you're on a job where you know you get whatever it is, if you get a quarterly review or annual review, whatever your performance evaluation is, to see if you can get those definitions and what have you, those standards in advance. That way you already know what you are going to be evaluated on, what they're going to be looking for. You already know what to expect. That way it won't be any surprises once you get to the process. I know sometimes they can be kind of secretive about that sort of thing, but if possible, see if you can get those definitions up front. That way you'll have a better chance, hopefully, of pulling off and getting a sparkling review. But absolute crazy talk, stupid talk. Thoroughly enjoyed it, Neil Postman. Definitely appreciate that. Any of the folks who dialed in, commentary on what we have heard thus far. If you have questions, again, some of the questions that have been raised thus far, we had a request for thoughts on how to deal with the classroom situation, black students being yelled at by a white female teacher. We had the question about white people clearing their throats in the presence of black people, if you've had to experience that, and what do we think that means in the context of a work situation. Also, we had the problem about someone being volunteered for the Christmas program where they had money put in on their behalf after they had declined to participate. People had thoughts about how to deal with that without creating new problems. If you have a hand up, you should be with us.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, Mr. Steele.
Awesome. This is Ken Steele, and I am reporting from somewhere in Southern California. I'm not quite sure where I am, but I will say this regarding being volunteered and having money put in on your behalf. For holiday celebrations, or I guess specifically Christmas celebrations, gracious acceptance sometimes is called for, even after you protest and after you've done everything and after you've made it very clear that you're not going to participate, and they insist on your participation by going ahead and volunteering your name and putting money in on your behalf, then okay, that was done on your behalf, and there's very little that you can do from this point without creating more problems for yourself. Because if you go and protest and you make a big enough stink to the point where they have to rescind the donation, and there's paperwork drawn and it's an incident, you could very well be, in effect, writing your own pink slip. Come quarter one, 2018, don't expect to have a position there going into quarter two. They'll find something. So, and it'll be directly related to your action regarding this. So in this regard, go ahead, and just allow them to use their coins in the manner that they want. Consider this: at your employer, they oftentimes take out insurance policies in your name, without your knowledge, or rather, you may sign something that effectively gives them that right, and you may not know about it anyway. So this is probably, in relative terms, not worth the frustration, the anguish, or the extra energy that it takes to even consider this. Look, they gave you some money.
Mr.
Just take
Steele,
it.
I think the issue here was there was an expectation that this money that was put in on this black person's behalf would be repaid. Like this was for a gift for someone else, and the person had refused a Christmas gift, and the person refused. And so some white person said, "Oh, well, we saw that you missed out, so we put in $5 for you, and you can pay me back." So that was the dilemma.
Oh, the $5? Well, don't even, if it's five, it's less than $10, I wouldn't consider it a debt that I'm owed. If they wanted to collect on that, then, they can, at that point, there can be a discussion as to, if that was agreed to upon or not. But if it's $5, I don't think it's worth the extra attention. I think that there's already too much attention that was given to this victim in their refusal to put in the $5 initially. So if it's $5, I wouldn't let them collect that on me. but I wouldn't take any more effort because it's already kind of snowballing into a situation that might not be manageable and that could have consequences far beyond the ones that you intended. I think it's on previous broadcasts we've discussed sometimes that participation in extracurricular activities may be an unspoken part of the job. And if you are interested in retaining that position, sometimes, putting the $5 in might be just required so that you can keep collecting your paycheck and you can keep paying your rent. So, man, if it got to the point where they're giving on your behalf and then they're expecting to collect, I would just avoid all of those people, do my work, and if they try to collect on me, I would say, hey, I don't have it, check back next Tuesday, and then eventually, they'll just get the picture that I'm not going to pay. Now I'm in my line.
He said, check back next Tuesday. That's clowning. Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. We absolutely have discussed that before about... cleared my throat, sorry. We absolutely have discussed that before about with some jobs, you might be required to participate in holiday stuff, or if it's a birthday thing, or sometimes they just have get-togethers that are not necessarily associated with a holiday, you might have to do some of these antics. We talked about that. If you're in that situation and you feel like, man, I gotta go to the Christmas party, we talked about that. The money thing does seem a tad different to me, like them requiring, and in this place, this is kind of a jack. Like I've said, I'm not gonna participate, and then you come in and demand that I do it without asking me and put money in on my behalf that I'm expected to repay. Like, yeah, that just seems kind of incorrect. That seems a bit beyond the normal, but I totally agree with Mr. Steele about you definitely want to minimize attention when you have a lot of unpleasant attention being focused on you on the job. Generally, I would try and get that as extinguished as quickly as possible. This is something that I would not want it dragging on. We're in February and we're still going back over the issue about this $5. I definitely would not want that sort of situation in the workplace. We have other folks. I think Roz is with us now. Are you with us, Roz? Maybe not.
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I had trouble with my mute button. I'm sorry.
Right on. I know you said you had commentary and then caller, she wanted to verify your email as well.
Sure, no problem. Yes, and I definitely agree with Mr. Ken Steele. Peace to you too. Yeah, definitely the attention thing you don't want. If you have to assess the situation and just use the proper logic and based on the context of your personal scenario. So definitely I agree with him on that. That's very, very intelligent and very good counter-racist code. Just speaking about the Christmas party thing, I happen to start working this job the week before the Christmas party. It's supposed to be next week, Thursday. I will not be attending. we're done with that. I don't do Christmas parties. I don't do hanging out with white people. I don't do hanging out with drunk white people. I don't do white people at all. So, they mentioned it to me today. So I said, I'll give it 24 hours. I didn't want to just immediately say no. So I said, I'll give it 24 hours. And then tomorrow, the first thing I'm telling them, nope, won't be able to do it. That's pretty much what it is. And I'll probably end up telling them I don't really celebrate the holidays because I don't. I have family members that do. Me personally, I don't, and I haven't for an extremely long time. And that's just what it is. I don't do that nonsense. So yeah, the Christmas party. And again, it happened to be for me advantageous that I'm starting now, in the sense that I can easily just say no because there's no external pressure. I don't know the cultural protocol for the company yet. It seems to be quite malleable and quite light as far as just the general environment. I mean, I don't think it would be a problem regardless, but I think once you've been in the company for a while, there might be more of a more pressure, even if it's something that's unwritten, there might be more psychological pressure to go to the party. Whereas since I'm just starting, it'll be easier for me to thwart that, but I would be thwarting it every year. But I just wanted to say that. So thanks again, Gus. And in reference to my email, yes, that would be raskelile@comcast.net.
Ross, can you say the K-E-L part again?
Sure, yes. K-E-L-I-L-E at comcast.net.
Okay, did you hear what it was about the wild lettuce and all that? I had some questions about dosage and where to buy and all that.
Sure, no problem. I didn't hear the question. But with wild lettuce, they actually have, I got it in two ways. I have the bag, the tea bag.
Sorry, Roz. I don't want to interrupt you, but I don't want to disturb the program, so I wanted to email you about it.
Sorry, this is Workplace Racism. This ain't Wild Lettuce Tea Night. I'm sorry. Yes, I'll be in touch with you. No problem. Just hit me up, and I'll shoot you the information, okay?
Okay, so it's Roz, K-E-L-I-L-E, at comcast.net?
Yes, Kalile. Roz Kalile, yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome, and peace to you, and I'll mute myself now, Gus. Thanks again. I'm sorry about that.
All right. Thanks, Gus.
Indeed. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Regarding holiday parties, the holiday season presents a really unique opportunity to be able to elude these company parties. One thing that I've found that is really useful for myself this year and a friend of mine. We're just saying, hey, we have a family engagement at that time. And that has been proven to be effective at shutting down any conversation, because a family engagement is something that most people are very... They're not prepared to try to separate you from your family during the holiday season. So if you say, we're just having our family get together at that date. I just checked my calendar, and my aunt is flying in, and it's going to be a really big to do, and I don't think I'll be able to make it. And that reduces any sort of thought about you, not being a team player. It reduces any thought of you not being somebody who celebrates the holiday season. I know that a previous caller said that they would, identify themselves as such. I wouldn't do that in this current political and social climate that we're in. I don't think that there's any benefits that you can yield from telling everybody that you deliberately don't celebrate the holidays. You can just make it a family affair. You can make it so that it's extremely private to you, and you can just make it so that all of their events that they have planned just happen to coincide with the events that you have planned for your family. So, that's something that I would suggest during the holiday season. I don't know if that'll work all year round, but I do know that in quarter four, it is very easy to use the I have a family gathering or I have a family get together or that just happens to be our family reunion time. And people won't think very hard about that. And I'll mute my line.
Indeed. I know some Cal's listeners have used that. I won't say excuse, but they have given that line, and it has worked for the Christmas party. Chantel, she's been on the program before. That's the one that she used. She said, she just said at first she was going to attend, but then when white people were publicly broadcasting that they were not going to attend and there seemed to be no repercussions or no guilt tripping them, like, oh man, you're not going. She changed her mind, recalibrated, and said she was not going to go. And that was the one that she added in, like, oh, we got an engagement that came up. The family's doing something. Sorry, won't be able to get together. And that was it. I think she said that they did do, there was some mild, oh, come on, you sure you can't hang out for just a little bit? Because it's coming, I think it's supposed to be tomorrow. Just come on, you don't think you can hang out for a little? No, we got that arrangement tomorrow. Sorry, just not going to be able to do. And that was that. Nobody else said anything. No nasty looks. Everybody was, you know, courteous. Just went on like another day. So, yeah, seems like that one might be one that you can utilize and get over on. Other folks that dialed in, if you had a hand up, if you had commentary, if you had your own situation or you wanted to comment on what we've heard thus far, line should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Peace. Greetings to all the listeners and yourself, Gus. I'm out in New York City, and I just actually happened to come from the holiday event, but this was a little different. This was a only Black event at my company, which was very interesting, might I say. But it was allowed me like access to different people within the company that I normally don't see. So my step and attitude was towards it was to minimize the drinking anyway. Just, I don't think it's appropriate even in that setting. And, make connections within the company afterwards. So for my situation, it's a little bit different for, as far as the holiday party went. That being said, I do have something to actually ask other listeners as well as yourself. We do have, in my company, we do have a higher up non-white person in the company. He is probably the highest person up in the company that is non-white. And he, from my understanding, a sister after the event was over spoke to me in regards to the gentleman and stated that he does not speak to anybody that is non-white in the company. And it's very obvious and prevalent. Like, he does it across the board. I've heard this from people he works with directly, his EAs, other people in all this of sorts. And my thoughts on it were basically that he's just trying to avoid being associated with anybody of quote that is non-white in the company to maintain his quote unquote power, the little power that he does have. And after that being said, you know, the sister disagreed with me and felt like it was something else, but I just felt like it was just about, all about power. And I personally feel like if I have to do that to quote unquote keep my power, then I don't know if it's really worth it to actually rise up to that position. But it's something that I wanted to bring to the table because it's, I've never actually even encountered that before. This is actually a first to me. So that being said, I'll mute my line. I just wanted to hear some opinions in regards to that. Thank you. Peace.
We'll hear what folks have to say about that. If that's, you know, if that's what they think is happening. Did I hear that correctly? Where you were, I guess, discussing, theorizing what might be happening with this, with another, Black coworker. And she maybe didn't agree with your assessment that that's what it was. She thought maybe it was something else.
I think she agreed, actually. Oh, okay. And she stated that still in her eyes that it's just rude and disrespectful to other people of non-color that he consistently does that. That's what was being reiterated by her. I just think that I understand why he's doing it. I don't agree, but I think I understand why he's doing it. Again, I was just looking to see if anybody else had any opinions on that.
Got it. What do folks think about the evaluation, the, I guess, ignoring of the other non-white employees or not speaking to the other non-white employees on the job? If we think that's what's happening, if he's got a correct assessment of the situation, or folks have other thoughts?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Myself, on the job, if there are other victims that I observe
Sometimes I will do a quick nod check, you know, just how do they respond to just a glance and a nod. And that, for me, usually is enough communication between me and another victim on the clock. Beyond that, I don't think it's very necessary. They're typically on their journey or their mission at this workplace, and if they're not really seeking out to talk to other victims, I don't think that, you know, they're looking for that on the job. And honestly, what can on the job another victim do for you other than perhaps maybe provide some relief from dealing with all of the suspected racists? I mean, like, you are in, you know, so-called enemy territory when you are on these jobs. So, you know, hanging out with a whole bunch of other victims, I don't suppose that doesn't strike me as too constructive. And it's not something that I've done. And in fact, I've been in some workplaces where, you know, you do the nod check and, you know, they don't reciprocate the nod. And then you kind of get the idea that, yeah, they're on the mode of, you know, they are not going to, acknowledge other victims on the clock in front of other, suspected racists, for fear of, I guess, you know, losing their position, being fired ultimately. You know, if you're cavorting with, you know, other black people on the job, many other black people might have the impression that that will lead to getting fired. And, you know, there might be some truth to that. So, you know, I wouldn't be too concerned with trying to get chummy with some victim that finds himself at a very high position at a large firm, large enough to have a black-only holiday party. You're working at a Ford or a GM or one of these very, very large institutional organizations. And, yeah, it just does not strike me as desirable to hang out with these people. And I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Steele, you make very valid points with that. The thing that's and yes, large firm, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm dealing with. And the thing that has helped foster other non-white people to maintain or somewhat survive in this environment is making connections with quote unquote higher ups that are also non-white to henceforth kind of give a heads up, not necessarily to be chummy and buddy-buddy with them on some kind of consistent basis. This is, everybody knows it's business, and there's sometimes you have to do what you have to do. But if somebody works in finance or in any department and you see, hey, there's budget cuts coming in real estate, or there's budget cuts coming in administrative, you can reach out to a brother or sister or non-white person in that department and say, hey, look, this is what's coming down the line. You may want to make headway or make some kind of decisions on as to how you may want to proceed further within the company, because you may be one of the people that are out of that department. So that's initially one of the reasons. I mean, there are other reasons as well, as far as positions being open. And even at the event, I was speaking intricately with people in HR and seeing what their perspective is in their department. And that gives me an open eye on how to move. And essentially, it just gives you an understanding of the playing field of what you're dealing with when you're going into the company, who you're dealing with, and what's going on. So that's what you can kind of get out of it. But as far as just having this kind of buddy chum relationship where we're hanging out later on after work getting drinks, I, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I just don't see that. You know, I don't see that. I think logically the best thing to do is to stay on code, get information that you need to get to maintain and survive and keep afloat. Yeah, so I'm in agreement with what you're saying as well, but that's some of what the reason why, you know, associating with other non-white people tends to occur in the company. That being said, I'll mute my line.
Yeah, you know, at these firms that are, you know, this large, that they have enough black people to have a black-only holiday party, they oftentimes have a black only managerial track. They'll have like a society within the company for the black employees. I've had a few friends that have been in these large firms that, you know, have these sort of things. And I'll just say this, if they have a black, you know, managerial track and a black association and a black club and everything like that, you best believe that they have a white association and a white club and a white managerial track that is leaps and bounds more effective at maneuvering within these same circles as these purported groups for victims. So, you know, honestly, like, I feel really, I've seen those work environments. I'm in the tech space, so those large work environments, they seem kind of foreign and alien to me. And to me, it'd be very troubling to be in a situation where they're knowingly treating black people differently from the other employees. That just lends to me that there's so much more going on than any of these black employees could possibly effectively help them to deal with when it comes to the things that matter within the organization. I don't know if my assessment is correct or not. I'm curious to hear your response.
I can't say that you're wrong. I mean, I think in every environment, and by the way, I'm also in the tech department, and I completely agree with you. And I think that goes to say almost though for almost any corporation where there's the good old boys club, and then there's maybe another little club associated that's also white, and that may be more towards the women in the company, but then there's the black area or the other area, so to speak. And I think that you're absolutely right. That goes without saying. But still, and at the end of the day, it's just still important to, you know, in a company the size that I'm at, to make those connections, to just even see other people that are trying to navigate as well and assist each other, even if it's in the smallest way. I think it's just mandatory and necessary. Again, I think we as non-white people need to be extremely patient with each other. And I oftentimes find that it's quite the opposite, you know, and outside of the working environment, and sometimes inside, but it's very difficult. And I notice most people are not patient with other non-white people. Non-white people are very immediately confrontational with each other and lack any kind of patience or understanding or even trying to help each other in any environment. So the fact that I was able to even go and gather some information from HR and from other departments kind of was still beneficial, and leave accordingly, not get tipsy or drunk or anything of that nature. I think it was still somewhat successful, but again, I completely understand what you're saying. Like, there is definitely a power level that's going on in the company that is a good old boys company. It is definitely male, white, old white male dominated. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. From down south, because we have another branch down south, our other branch down south, to Europe, and here, and it's all old white men, hands down. You know, that being said, I'll mute my line.
Context of white supremacy. Folks have comments they would like to share. Number again, 641-715. 3640, the code 564943, pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. I did want to make sure I got in appreciation for the, I think you said minimizing alcohol at the all black Christmas party. Sobriety would be best, even if it's all black people. I still encourage that. And I do also, I think, for this program, I think I've said before, we talked about it before, some black people in the workplace, their code is, I am going to keep to myself. I am not here to be offering tips and tidbits and chatting it up with other black people. I think we've talked about that, because sometimes, or just some people, they've had that experience where other black people in the workplace have caused problems for them. We're all victims. Racists can and do frequently use other victims of racism to cause strife and conflict for us on the job. So some black people, they've just made it their code. I just keep my mouth closed and I don't, you know, do a whole lot of cavorting with anyone, white, non-white, whatever it is. I stay to myself. I have as little to say. I get my work done and I go home, and I can totally understand and appreciate the logic and having that sort of code. That's why, you know, on this broadcast, I'll say, for some people that take that code, I'm going to reach out and try and help other black people out on the job. Great. Black self-respect for the people who say I'm not doing any of that because I might end up getting in trouble. Heard that before. I know some people here take that same sort of strategy while they're on the job. We had a person who wrote in. I wanted to make sure I got this, and then other folks, if you're with us, if you have commentary to share, feel free. But we had a person who wrote in. This is a black female. She said, I know that I shouldn't be, but I must admit that I'm still amazed by the way white people inject racist comments into everyday conversations. Several weeks ago, I was present at a department meeting. After the meeting concluded, the department head started talking about football. Naturally, he brought up the Colin Kaepernick situation, and also expressed concern about the future of football due to concussions, protests, etc. One of my white female coworkers said that it's not fair that Kaepernick is able to bring his own social agenda to the workplace when she can't bring hers to the workplace. The department head said that watching football is just a way to unwind and relax, and suggested that the NFL should never have started playing the national anthem at the start of football games. Then he started talking about O.J. Simpson. He just loved the way O.J. ran across the field. He said it was beautiful to watch. From there, he talked about a recent TV program about the O.J. Simpson trial. One segment of the program cited an incident in Simpson's youth in which he evaded punishment by the school principal. Simpson, along with a group of other youths, was caught shooting craps when they were discovered by a teacher. The teacher sent everyone to the principal's office. However, Simpson went to the office ahead of everyone else and informed the principal that a group of boys had been caught gambling and would be coming to the office to receive punishment. Thus, by extricating himself from the group, Simpson evaded the punishment inflicted upon everyone else. My boss's point in telling that anecdote was that Simpson has always been sneaky, even as a youth, and unable to avoid punishment rightly due him. At that point, my other white female coworker chimed in. She told us that during the Simpson trial, she worked at another law firm that allowed the entire office to take the whole day off, and everyone watched the verdict together at a local bar. My God, I cannot imagine a more unsafe environment than being at a bar with a group of white people to watch the O.J. Simpson verdict in 1995. Continuing. My boss began to outline the many mistakes made by the prosecution and stressed the importance of being prepared for trial. He also talked about the importance of setting a matter prior to trial because of the many things that can go wrong at trial. If I were more confused, I would have concluded that there was no racist intent behind my boss's discussion of the Simpson trial. I would have simply thought that he used the Simpson trial as a cautionary tale to always be prepared. But I know better. Next time, I will excuse myself immediately after any meetings, or I'll have a laundry list of constructive work related topics to discuss. As another point of illustration, I was recently at the auto dealership getting routine maintenance on my car. A black lady was sitting across from me quietly talking to a white female. A news broadcast came on discussing the devastation in Puerto Rico. The black lady expressed her concern about the loss of life and the need for power and other vital assistance in the area. The white lady, on the other hand, said that the earthquake was a blessing in disguise because Puerto Rico was overpopulated. Yes, white people will use every opportunity to practice racism. End of her commentary. The one thing that I will say about that, wow, we're in the workplace and somehow we have deviated to rehashing the O.J. Simpson trial in the middle of December. We're not talking about White Elephant. We're not talking about Secret Santa. We're not talking about, you know, recipes for eggnog, 25 things you can do with eggnog. We're talking about the O.J. Simpson trial from 1995. The O.J. Simpson miniseries movie is almost 2 years old at this point. Are you serious? We don't have anything else to cover in the meeting. I totally agree with her commentary about next time around. I will make sure that I do not get caught in this situation. I will leave promptly when the meeting ends, or I will already have bullet pointed talking points that are related to work or other constructive matters that need to be discussed. So this does not veer off into no good niggers that we don't like Colin Kaepernick and O.J. Simpson. Did folks have commentary? Any of the folks who were with us have commentary on that or any of the other tidbits we've heard on the broadcast this evening? While folks are waiting, I'll make sure to give out the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Please do not wait till the last minute. If you think you have commentary you would like to share, if you want to respond to any of the questions that have been posed, go ahead and get a hand up if you have comments you would like to add. Was that someone had comments they wanted to share?
I have another comment.
Yes, sir.
More of a statement and a question. I was texting with my best friend from high school earlier today, and he thinks I'm just outright paranoid about white supremacy. Now, and this is, of course, another victim of white supremacy as well, too. Now, when people say things like you're paranoid, how do you respond to that?
I would make sure that I am talking to someone who thinks that there or believes that there is a system of racism, white supremacy. If the person that I'm talking to does not think that there's a system of white supremacy, I don't know that there would be a whole lot we could discuss. If you think that I'm paranoid that, well, you don't think there's a system of white supremacy. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult for us to have many points of congruence because we have a very different analysis of what's happening on the planet. Does this person think there's a system of white supremacy?
Ironically, he does. He just thinks that it's not the only thing to worry about in the world. He said, and I quote, you know, you're married, you have a house, you got a lot of things going for you. Worry about that. That was his response.
Oh, well, that is certainly reasonable. And for the people, if they take that position, if anything that sounds like, in my view, anything that sounds like you are focusing too much on racism, white supremacy, or it's not that big of a deal, you sound kind of paranoid, anything that's like that, the only thing I would have to say about it is everything that you said, logical. Yes, having, you know, a family, having a house, having a career, all those things are very, very important. The conclusion that I've come to is that racism, white supremacy is designed to totally eradicate, destroy all of those things that are valuable to me. So I have to be very concerned about this if that family, that career, the house, all the other things that he mentioned if all of those things are important to me, then I have to be very concerned about white supremacy racism. And he can agree with that.
Ironically, that was my response, and he still thinks I'm paranoid.
I wouldn't worry about it at all. I would just be, well, we'll have to see. I might be paranoid. I could be in error. And, you know, we'll just have to continue and be observant to see if there are any problems that pop up as a result of racism. And if I'm able to successfully avoid those problems because of my paranoia. But, yeah, I wouldn't worry about that at all.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yes, sir. Other folks have commentary or want to respond to any of the questions that have been put forward? Everyone satisfied or anything else they needed to make sure they got in?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Just, this is minor, but still, I just pay respects to, thanks, Gus, and thanks to Thomas out in New York for the assistance with my son on looking into other programs. I actually was able to find and work certain things out with somebody, and I'm in the process of trying to get him better services and a better environment that are more fostering to his level. That's pretty much all. I just wanted to say thank you. That's all.
I see. You had a school situation with your son that you had called in about previously. Was that it?
Yeah, it was in regards to my son not being, basically he's not being promoted into the next class. And he's been the standout student, like, for in his class since he's been there. It's just, it's blatantly obvious. And they've been just giving so much pushback. I've been just frustrated, and I'm just trying to find other ways and other things for him to actually get into. And I called in about last week, and you guys were able to facilitate some assistance with that. So I appreciate it.
For sure. Appreciate that. That was from last week. I do remember. Now, I think that was when we got the directory Raj shared with different homeschooling or independent schooling options and some other suggestions that were raised for the school situation with your child, which is also rampant. If you have a child, we had a couple that came up this evening with children being accosted in some way in the school system that is designed to happen in the system of racism, white supremacy. That is not paranoia. That is just logic, being observant and evaluating evidence. That is everyday occurrence worldwide. There was also a report. Someone wanted to make sure this just got mentioned. There was a report about black people being, I think the word that they used was tokenized in nonprofit situations. They put it on my Facebook page, and it caught my attention just because I had seen reports that were similar to this before, where racists, they had lots of these schemes where they will put out, they being whites, they'll put out programs that are supposed to be for what they'll call minority business. Like, they'll do different things like give you no interest loans or other things to make it easy, right? To make it seem like, oh yes, we're helping the Negroes, you know, start businesses and what have you, so they can be entrepreneurs. But what they would do is, it looks like this is a black business. It is not. They just have some black people that they showcase and they put them out front. Oh yes, this is, you know, Rogers business. And in fact, this is a white owned company, and you just never see the white people that own the company. And they were saying that this sort of thing was common. It seems to be that some racists have figured out a way of doing this and being successful at making it seem like they have nonprofits that are set up that are supposed to be great and do all this great work, and they just end up abusing and taking advantage of black people. Yeah, 8 ways people of color are tokenized in nonprofits. I would still put that in the rubric of workplace racism. They kind of have bullet pointed some of the 8 major ways. Number one is, you recruit people of color to formal leadership positions, but keep all the power. I think we heard some of that today, pretty consistent in the system of white supremacy. The two was, your paid staff in charge of messaging are white, and your volunteer storytellers are people of color. The next one is you only hire, I'm going to switch this to non-white, you only hire non-white people for non-white people stuff. Number four, you create and maintain an organizational culture that promotes white dominance, white supremacy. Number five, you convene special diversity councils, but don't build non-white leadership on your main board. You use non-white people as your mouthpiece and shield against other non-white people. Number seven, you give more money to white-led nonprofits, even when the nonprofit is focused on non-white people. And the last one, you intuitively know the nonprofit space would benefit from more non-white leaders, but you don't really know why. I'm sure there are many others. To me, all this really means is that racists have really codified the art of exploiting non-white people when they can give the appearance that they are doing great work, that, hey, we're not even about making money. This is supposed to be a nonprofit. We're just doing great justice work, social justice work. And no, they're practicing racism, white supremacy, and they have lots of skilled ways, way many more than these eight. But I did think that was a great report as well. Any other comments folks wanted to make sure they got in? Did we miss anybody? Anything else they needed to make sure to share? Caller in Ohio, did you have commentary? Well, I guess we haven't heard from this person at all, so let's get her first, and then we'll get you as well.
Hi, is this me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, hi. Hello to Gus, the host, and to all the callers and listeners. There's a couple of things that I want to say. It's a great show tonight, as usual. To the young lady that was from New York that's living in South Carolina, that's just a very good idea because, you know, those, you know, they tear us down, and we just don't realize it. I was working with a lady. She said her daughter's a teacher, and she said her daughter basically won't teach, you know, in districts where they're black students. And as I thought about the statement when we departed, you know, I remember saying, I was really kind of sad because, you know, we are just so, you know, just it's just the self-hate against us. And it's painful because while these people stand before us destroying us, we still look to them. So I think somebody said something about like the teacher is a surrogate parent. And so I think to the young lady in that's in South Carolina now, that, you know, big ups to you for doing that, because, you know, our children, and we do, all of us need as much praise and you know, pat on the back and words spoken to us to help uplift us, because we get torn down all the time. To the young man that said about the word, about paranoid, and that the person said, oh, you're paranoid. And what I have to say about that, and I remember one time, this was when Al Sharpton was still on MSNBC at 6 in the evening. Now, I didn't watch his show. I don't watch it now, but I didn't watch it then. And I just happened to turn it on that day because actually I was waiting for Chris Matthews to come on. And Al Sharpton was talking about paranoid. And he made the statement about that, and I just thought it was a good statement. He said, when people say to you that, oh, you know, you're paranoid, he said, you just need to tell them, I may be paranoid, but that doesn't mean what I think is happening isn't happening. Because, you know, a lot of times when people think that you're paranoid, oh, you think this is happening, oh, that's not happening, when actually it is happening. So if you're saying I'm paranoid, it's like, well, I might just be, but, you know, what I think is happening, it is happening, you know. So I just want to throw that out there. And, you know, like you say, just workplace racism and the things that go on. I work in a temporary job, and so the other day, it's a call center, and it's for a fabric chain, if you will. And so a lot of times, you know how when you in these customer service positions, sometimes you have to bend over a lot to please that customer. And it could be things like, we'll give you free shipping, you know, we'll you know, if you purchase this item last week, is trying to purchase an item was $10, okay, well, if you're trying to purchase it today and say that item is now $20, well, we'll give it to you for $10. So a couple of the coworkers, you know, my coworkers, you know, and so they, these two black females, and so they were just like, you know, I don't hardly give in this money because this is my money. And, you know, I just don't feel like I have to be, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they were going on and on about that. So I was driving home the other night and I was thinking about this conversation. And so it made me think, like when the young lady that she talked about earlier said, my computer or something like that, and how they discovered that this person is I guess, going through the degree in ITEC, so now they've messed up the person's computer. And you cautioned about saying, my computer, my this, my that, you know. And so I was thinking about it, just listening to you, and I was thinking about those two, you know, young ladies, and they were going on about that one day. And I just kind of chuckled, because when I thought about it, I said, you know, you can say to somebody, this is my money. I'm like, tomorrow you can come to work, and they would, you know, show you the door. Somebody could be sitting in the meeting making a decision while you talking about, this is my money, and I'm not going to give away my money, because that's how I keep my job. Somebody could be sitting in the office deciding that we no longer need you or you, you know. So I mean, just things that we do in the workplace. Another thing the other night, last week, and so, you know, these are quite a few blacks, you know, these are saying customer service. And so somebody said something, so we were all standing up there laughing, and then this one white guy walked by. Well, I was just walking out to go get a soda out the machine, and I kind of chuckled. I wanted to tell him, I said, y'all better stop laughing. I said, you know what, when black people get together, we stand up here laughing. Some white person will say, they ain't got enough work to do. And I laughed so hard, because you know that's how they think. Just like you say, black people standing in the office talking about work-related stuff, the white woman walks by, clears her throat. Excuse me for that. You know, clears her throat. So we know the things that they can do. I remember Dr. Wilson one time said, you know, you stand around the coffee cooler talking, here they come. You know, here they want to come and talk just to find out what's going on with you, you know. So, and I just want to throw this out, workplace racism. And I do think this may account for some of it. And maybe this is the discussion that you may talk about more on Saturday. You know, Roland Martin had his news show, TV1, and it came on Monday through Fridays from, I think he initially started off at 9 o'clock. I think it went from like 9 to 10. And then they moved it to 7 to 9. So, I think the 21st of this month is going to be his last show. They're canceling it for budget concerns. And so I just personally myself think it's kind of like workplace racism. You know, some people say, well, you know, Radio 1, TV 1, aren't they black? You know, that's Kathy Hughes and her son. And I actually think that she's like 51% owner. I don't think it's all of her now. But I just, for me, it's like workplace racism, because in the point of it's just like black voices being silent in like the new news area. You have, I think, Radio 1, because I understand Oprah is sole owned. So Radio 1 and TV 1 is probably the only black owned. There's a couple of, but you know, that's out there. And it, you know, you have a news division, but now it comes to make budget cuts. So what you do, you cut down your news division. And so I just throw this out, and I'll just say this, you know, Tom Joyner, he works for Radio 1 too. So he said he was calling for a boycott. So he was telling us, he said, I may get suspended for this. Because, you know, he's retiring in 2 years. So I just think it's an even decision. You see what I'm saying? And I guess it does go back to, like you said, even working for a black business does not mean, or a black, or supposedly a black owned business, does not mean you won't run into workplace racism problems. Because I do feel like this with Roland Martin is part of that, because it is a part of shutting down black voices. TV1 has, in my opinion, very little original programming, and I might be wrong in this. And I also know, too, though, that reality TV is not black people's voices. So I think there may be something with that decision being made to shut down his show. And I just wanted to, that was something else. Well, I can't think of what it is now, but I just wanted to share those two things. And thanks for taking my call out of my line.
For sure. Appreciate that caller in Ohio. I did see that about Roland Martin's news segment, them wrapping it up this week. Same thing exactly that I have said before. Just because it is allegedly a black-owned company does not mean that white supremacy racism will not be a factor in what happens there with black people being employed or not employed, with the case with Mr. Martin. And I think Mr. Scotty Reed and many others have talked about that silencing of black journalists for a sizable amount of time, just removing, particularly in this time period, removing black people from being able to give a cogent narrative to what's happening locally, nationally, globally, and have a serious news segment. In fact, just, you know, you can do a comparison contrast. They have had all these journalists, Matt Lauer and John Hockenberry, all these folks. I think WNYC, I think they had about three or four different employees just this week that have been fired. I think NPR had two or three different people that were fired and suspended and all that. They probably will be replaced by other whites, whether it's a white man or a white woman. Particular or frequently when black people are bumped out of these positions, they do not get replaced with other black people. You just lose a black outlet for news and information. I did also want to make sure that I got in on a related note. I want to get the male caller who spoke up before our caller in Ohio as well. But I did also want to speak up on that with some of the reports of alleged sexual abuse or harassment. I guess in a number of these instances, the person that has been accused has come out and apologized and admitted that they did do something wrong or they have not contested. That's not the case in all of these. I think at least one of the employees at WNYC, the person that was accused, said that they did not do anything wrong. They vigorously disagreed with the allegations, and they were led out. This was a white person. They were led out with security, led out, and they're supposed to investigate and all this. Just, I think that sort of environment could be very dangerous because that is, and others have said, there's no due process for you to just be able to make an allegation against somebody, and particularly an allegation from something that may have happened years ago, 10, 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that in some instances, to make an allegation. There's no due process. There's no trial. There's no court of law. There's no review of evidence where you can just have someone make an accusation and that's it. Security is coming and throwing you out of the building. Get your belongings, get your little cardboard box and you're gone. Wow. I think that could have extraordinary ramifications, dangerous ramifications for black people moving forward. That is something that's been a huge concern to me. And I just saw that today. I was stunned to have people being thrown out who were not convicted and who are contesting. They're not saying, oh, yes, forgive me, I did something wrong. They're not saying that at all. Some of these folks are saying, I did not do anything. I totally dispute all of these charges and I'm leaving, but it is under vigorous protest. If that's being done to white people, man, I would be minding all of my P's and Q's. I would not have compliments for anybody in the workplace about, oh, you had something nice or you wore nothing. It would be total business. I'm not doing the office parties or any of that unless it's under the code that's been outlined. It would just be a very new day on the plantation with all of this that has taken place. It would, at least for me, it would require some serious readjustment to how we are functioning, behaving in the workplace. Absolutely making sure that I am not alone going someplace with a white woman, maybe anybody. Just very different changes, very different times on the plantation with what's been happening. The male caller who chimed in before we heard from our caller in Ohio, thank you for being patient, sir. Did you have commentary you wanted to add?
Yes. I will say something that has been happening to me at work over these last couple years ever since I started my job. Another thing was when I first started my current position, I worked a previous position in the same place for about 3 months before being moved over to a different department. The person who originally hired for my current position literally just didn't show up for work. So they moved me over because of my background. And before they moved me over, they lowered the position from principal to regular or associate. So fast forward to within the last year or so, after I've been doing this job for about 3 years, it's been very interesting at work because, well, for one thing, I'm the only black person in my department. There's three departments, three different types of planning departments. And I do transit and the transportation department. And there's no principal planner in my department. And in the other departments, there are principal planners. So in zoning, for example, there's a principal planner. A woman was promoted to principal planner from regular planner, and she doesn't have a master's degree or a professional planning license. In the long-range planning department, there one person was promoted to principal planner right before he quit and went to a different job. He has no degree in planning,
not even a bachelor's degree. Another person who I'm not sure if he even has a degree in planning, but he has a master's in architecture or landscape architecture. He was promoted to principal planner without a planning license. And just this week, a new principal planner started in the Long Range Transportation Department. I actually went out to lunch with him today because I do my best to get to know the people in my department at the very least. And I didn't get a chance to ask him whether or not he has a license, but I'm seriously doubting it right now. But I will confirm that. I was thinking about what I should, how I was going to go about asking to be promoted to the principal planner in my department because there is no principal planner in my department. Mm-hmm. One of the things I was hoping to do was I took my planning license last month. Unfortunately, I did not pass it. And I was going to use it as leverage to request a promotion to that position. And unfortunately, I failed it. But I still think I have the opportunity to ask for it because there's a whole bunch of people being promoted to principal planner who not only don't have planning degrees, but also don't have planning certificates. And I was wondering, anyone can give advice on what's the best way to go about requesting that. Should I just say, hey, what do I need to be promoted to principal planner? Or is there another way to go about asking for such a thing on the plantation? Thank you.
Wow. I hope you're able to take the test again so that you can pass, figure out what you need to make improvements on and get to it. I'm even reminded, I think Dr. Umar had said on the program with some of these tests, we're not present when it's being graded. So who knows if you failed or not. But anyway.
Engineering and planning. Two different exams. I failed both of them.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully you'll get to retake it. You can pass it and move forward. But if you said that, was it your team is the only one that doesn't have a planning coordinator, or is that
a principal planner? So it's like the senior level planner, right below the manager for that respective department. And before I took on my current position, it was a principal planner position. And then when the person who was originally hired did not show up for the job, for whatever reason, we have no idea why the person did not show up, I was moved over to that position, and instead of simply to give it to me in the principal planner position, it would have came with a raise because it was it would have been from regular planner to principal planner in a different department. They just lowered the position to regular planner so they didn't have to pay me more.
Standard operating procedure.
Over this last year, a couple people have been promoted to principal planner, and some of them don't have degrees in planning. Not to say they're not competent at their job. Or they don't even have planning licenses. And I don't think a lot of them were even planning to even take their licensing exam, from what I can tell. Yeah.
That's almost cliche on white supremacy in terms of whites getting these promotions and getting moved up where they don't have the degrees or whatever the other prerequisites are for getting those positions. I think you can pitch it as your team, you all do not have a principal planner currently. You're qualified for this position. That's what you were hired to do. And then they just moved it down, downgraded the position title or what have you. But this is what you can bring to the position. We don't have that. I'm knowledgeable about what our department is working on. This is what I can add to our team, our division, with me being in this, me getting this position. I think if you can pitch it that way in terms of what you all are missing by not having a principal planner and what you can do from that position, that might be a way that you can go. That other folks have recommendations for how they would go about requesting, I guess this is a promotion or getting back the official title that you had when you got this job, principal planner?
Something along those lines. Well, the restatement of the position to principal planner before it was given to me and reduced and given to me.
Reduced. Okay. Any suggestions on how you would ask for the original position as it was given to you, principal planner, with the salary to boot?
Maybe everyone's already asleep.
Don't have thoughts about a promotion or a raise. I would just ask. Even though you didn't get the pass the exam or what have you. If other whites have that position and they do not have those degrees or what have you, unless they have specific things outlined that you have to have this or you have to have that qualification to be principal planner that you know you don't have, unless it's something that is that explicit, I would just go ahead and ask. This is what I was brought in for. I think I've earned it. This is the work that I've done. This is what I can do from this position that our team or this division is currently lacking because there is no principal planner. And just go from there. See what they say.
Okay.
Thank you very
much. Oh, we might have one. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to ask the caller, is this a civil service position that you have?
I've heard that term before, but I'm not exactly sure what it means, other than okay. I work for a county or government job.
Yes. That's what it means. You work for a county or a government job. Okay. Is there a union involved?
Not in my state.
Okay, not in your state. Okay, so it's a county or a government job. You said there was testing. Promotions are based on testing. Is that correct?
No, that's not true. The tests were simply for like professional certifications in like engineering or planning. And that for like it's just the profession in itself. Promotions where I work are merely if the position is available, it is first marketed internally through the county.
Yes.
And then it's made public to the rest of the country or whoever around the world might want to apply for the position who can legally apply for it.
Okay. So I would just ask from the people who are divvying out the jobs, what do I need to do to get, you know, to get to that level? I would just ask. The only reason why I ask is because I worked in with government when I was in New York. I worked for the state of New York, and we had, you know, that was considered a civil servant. You are a civil servant. You work for the public sector. I work for the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities. So you work for the public sector, and I was a supervisor there. I started out as a case manager, and it was I had to take tests, not for certifications, but I had to take tests in order to get promotions. So I would always, when I wanted to know about another grade level or getting a promotion, I would always defer to the civil servant office, which was the main office in Albany, New York, to find out how I needed to qualify for a position. So I would do what just Gus would ask the people who are divvying out the nickels and attaching those nickels to that position on how you can move to the next level. I would just ask. But thank you for thank you.
I hope that's been helpful. Sure, sure. Now, to me, it was, as far as I can tell, there were two sides of the question. What do I need to do to get to this level, or can I have this job or be promoted to this position and title?
Sure, those are valid questions. What do I need to do, and can I do it, and how can I get it done? Those are very valid questions, hopefully they won't be as elusive as they were with your own questions and let you know how to get it done.
Okay.
Definitely, since you were hired for this position and then they reduced the title and the nickels that you were going to get for this position, I would start with that second question first. Can I get this job, the commensurate salary, principal planner? And then if not, what do I need to do to get the job? I would start that way because it seems like you already had this and they just kind of took it from you. So you're just really looking to be reinstated the way that I'm looking at it. The person that called in from the Dallas area, did you have a question? Person that called in from the Dallas area?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thanks for the call. I'm a first time caller. I had a couple of observations from my workplace I wanted to share with the line.
I guess here I work in a kind of corporate setting area, in a building where it has other businesses in there. I work in a call center for a auto finance company. Anyways, I work on the 8th floor. So there are different companies out throughout these different floors, and we have a large elevator bank where maybe some elevators go from 1 to like the 12th floor, or maybe 15 to the 20th floor. So it's different elevators, maybe 10 elevators in the main lobby. Normally people take their own elevators because, you know, there's enough elevators for everyone here, just based off timing. But this was, I normally try to have my own space. I'd rather not get in a room, elevator full of suspected racists. Anyways, there's one particular instance. I made my way to the elevator by myself, walked to the elevator there and scanned my badge. I closed the door. All of a sudden, the door opens up with probably two, maybe they're in their fifth, maybe they're in their like early 60s. And here in Dallas, there's like a certain type of person you see here, like white person. They're like kind of, we call them obviously redneck, but they're very rich. They're like wealthy, well-to-do, you know, so rednecks, and very heavy redneck accent. Anyways, I scan my badge to, of course, go to my floor, which is the 8th floor, and again, the door opens up. The two races open the door, and there's one lady, she told me, you're going to have to wait, in like a very kind of, you know, just your standard kind of redneck tone. They had some kind of a tacky conversation going on. Basically, I just kind of felt like they kind of forced me to be in this situation. It was very uncomfortable. I'm in the middle of the elevator. The lady gets to my right, and then the male gets to my left. And continue to have this kind of tacky conversation about a barbecue, where they plan on getting very drunk, you know, and just having a grand old time. But it's very interesting that there were 10 available elevators, and it's almost like they seen me, sped up just to be in the elevator with me, and kind of, I felt kind of terrorized because, again, the lady did make mention to talk to me saying that I'm going to have to wait. Again, you know, they had a conversation, went to their floor, I went to my floor. But again, it was very interesting that it kind of seems like they sped up just to kind of be with me. Again, like I said, I just want to kind of share that with me, with the line. Again, it's my first time calling, kind of nervous, but I just wanted to bring the observation to the line to see if anyone kind of sees these little kind of random, I guess, acts of terrorism. Thank you.
First time caller, appreciate that. If they are speeding up to get on, I can totally respect your code in terms of just wanting to ride by yourself and not wanting to be in an enclosed space. Similar to what I was saying, not wanting to be alone, particularly with white women, given the current circumstances. I think Delectable Negro was mentioned before. I think sometimes whites, they like that sort of thing. Like, oh, we'll, you know, get on with the Negro and see what he's up to. And I think Thomas in New York talked about, I think that was just last week. He called in, he said he would get on the elevator, and the white women, think he said they would get on with the expectation that he's going to press the button for us, that we can just get on, go to the back and, yeah, nigga, press the floor for me. That could be one of the things that they're doing. I think some other folks have talked about just being in that sort of situation where they feel like the white person is racing to get on the elevator at the same time, or to beat them getting on the elevator as though it's some sort of contest or what have you. I think some other people have said in that sort of situation that they just wait. Like, I don't care if the elevator is empty and it's just one white person or two white women. Like you were saying, if it's just two of them, if we all get there at the same time, I'm going to wait and catch the next one. Like, no thanks, I left my keys, or I got to grab a tissue really quick, go ahead, I'll catch the next one. Like, I just would not ride with them, catch the next one, and, you know, I'll take 30 seconds and think to myself, let you all ride on up. Did other folks have thoughts on what might be happening with the elevator situation?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Just a comment on the caller. He already probably understands this, but just a word to the wise is just, and you reiterated it as well, but just be very mindful of just your interactions, especially with white men, women in the office. I've run into the scenario pretty similar in some regards, where I go on the elevator with a white woman and a comment may come up, something may be said, you kind of nod your head and go, yeah, I hear you. And you may think of it as nothing, but the next interaction that person may have with you might be on a completely other, totally different level. And I say that because that's happened to me, where I've had to do work for that client the next time around. And the next time the client saw me, her comment to me was, well, hey, now you know where my office is. And my response to her was, okay. And I kept on moving. But we never had any interaction that was intimate in any regards, just a kind of nod, yeah, busy day type of thing. But she took it and put it in a whole nother context. And it made me just even sharper to be honest with myself and say, I can't even really say anything on the elevator or greet people that may perceive anything wrong or take anything out of the situation. So just a word to the wise, just be very mindful of that, because I don't, again, considering the circumstances and the environment we're in right now, where white men are getting in trouble over things, you just just fall back and do what you need to do and keep it moving, because it's dangerous. It's very dangerous. That being said, I'll mute my line.
I think for the elevator situations too, it's good to keep in mind that there frequently nowadays, with all the technology, that there are cameras in lots of the elevators, even whether it's sound or no, but there generally will be a camera of some sort. I would keep that in mind. If it's any sort of interaction on an elevator and they come back later with an accusation, it could be anything. They could go back at the camera and, oh man, look at the way you were standing. And I can see how that was intimidating. I would keep that in mind, that there is a camera with how you're standing, all of that. And it might even be a good code to adapt. Again, someone said this previously, that when they get there, if they get to the elevator and it's, you know, even one other white person present, I'm going to go ahead and wait and catch the next one. Left my keys in the car really quick. Got to run back. Not catching that one. That might be the way to go, at least for the time being. With that, we did our 3 hours. I missed having Stacy from the UK on with us. I called her right at the beginning and she was there at the ready. But like I said, the newfangled Skype, it confounded me today. I was not able to figure out all the new gadgetry that they have on the freshly updated version of Skype. But hopefully I'll have that figured out next time around so we can have Stacy back with us live. We'll be here tomorrow for the Wisdom of Psychopaths. This is our fourth session. Kevin Dutton, Loving the Text, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be here Saturday for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And then we'll be here on Monday, continuing our conversation about maternal mortality rates and resources, information for Black mothers, pregnant Black mothers. That'll be Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have questions, if you have guest suggestions, issues with the archives, if you have commentary on workplace racism, just drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. You can also hit us on Skype at Until Justice. You can hit us on the Facebook pages. Let us know if you have a problem or concern. I will again restate, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I know it is that time of year for Christmas parties and all that jazz. I think we already have enough problems. There's a lot of evidence that racists, they have done a lot of damage to Black people because of different drugs and poisons that they've dumped on us, that they have taken advantage of us when we're intoxicated and not able to think to the best of our ability. I think it would behoove us to really promote sobriety. Let's take care of our brain computer. Let's take care of our health spiritually, mentally, physically, as best we can. Particularly, let's take care of our brain computer so that we can make phenomenal decisions and crank out new concepts and solutions to the problem: racist man, racist woman, racist child. And again, the sobriety checkpoints, I'm sure, will be in effect for this month because they know people are going to be out and about for the holidays and all that. Just keep that in mind. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. If you're in a vehicle, you want to be sober and buckled up every time, driver or passenger. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Hey, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.